Hello and welcome to GFW Radio. This is the podcast for March 19th, 2008. We're recording it on the 18th because that's the way we are.
You sound frantic there.
Really?
You're like, hello and welcome. Like, hurry up.
I was trying to sound a little more professional than that.
Well, we just got so much to talk about.
We have so much. I got to talk fast so we get it all in. This is Jeff Green, editor-in-chief of GFW, and I'm here with the usual cast plus one of our regular, new regulars. Introduce yourselves.
Ryan Scott.
Anthony Gallegos.
Sean Elliott.
Sean Malloy.
So I guess last week I started to say that Blizzard had said something about us introducing ourselves, and then I never told
you never
why.
Fully explained what that meant.
So I'll do it now just in case, which is it wasn't Blizzard said do this, and we listened to what Blizzard says. It was that one guy who works at Blizzard came up and offered me the advice because we had talked about it here on the podcast. You know, we had talked about whether we need to keep doing that every week. And he said, yes, you do, because you know, we need to put a voice with the name. And sometime every week, it's going to be somebody's first time. So,
was it by any chance one of the lead designers for World of Warcraft?
No, it was not.
Okay, because I was going to say, I talked to... I missed his name, but at the one-up awards
Corey
ceremony.
Stockton.
Yeah.
Corey, was one of the PR fellows.
Kind words for our magazine and stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't need to repeat them, but...
Sure you do.
If it was him, I'll take his word for it. We'll have to introduce ourselves.
I think it's a fine idea.
To introduce ourselves?
Yeah.
Sure. Why not?
And that's done.
Okay, now we did that. Do we have anything else this week?
Yeah.
I've been really busy all day, so I haven't even seen you guys. I've been holed up in my office writing your employee evaluations.
Uh-oh.
I decided that like today's podcast will be the final determination.
Does this work?
Of everyone's grade.
Does this work like college, though, where we get to do an evaluation of you as well?
Well, you get to... Oh, that would suck. I sure fucking hope not. No, I think Shu evaluates me. But, like, we sit, like, I write this thing, and then HR approves it, and then, well, they look at it, and then they'll go, oh, you can't do this, Jeff. These are too, like, nice.
Too sensual.
They're too sensual, yeah. This is harassment. No, they'll say, you got to put in something negative here, because otherwise it looks like you didn't really, you know, try.
Really?
Which is true. Yeah, I didn't.
Oh, boy.
And, yeah, because then it has to look like you were balanced, you know, that you weren't just being... You know, nice.
This,
so I'll have to come
that.
Up with some random
you
thing.
You basically have to write a boilerplate game review. You,
yeah, it is. It is.
The people you work with.
It is. Pros. Right.
Well, hopefully HR doesn't listen to this podcast.
Ryan's graphics are polished. His controls
but
are
he had
loose.
A buggy installation. So, yeah. So then I'll do that. And then you'll come into my office and I'll, like, hand you this thing. And you're going to look at it. And there's, you know, it's like column from 1 to 5. But it's kind of like the 7 to 9 scale, you know.
That sounds waja.
Yeah, but then there's going to be like one or two things that are like in the 2 or 3 column. You're going to be looking at it going, what the fuck? Why does Jeff say that I, you know, whatever it is? And I'll say, I had to put that in there because they said I did. So there it is. Now we don't actually have to have the evaluation.
So is this the evaluation?
This is it. You guys are great.
I had a past job I had. They switched my supervisor like the day before they were doing evaluations. So the guy I had never worked with in my entire life, I had worked with for like a day, did my evaluation 2 days later, and I was like, what is the point of this?
Wow.
And he did it completely sincerely. It was just really bizarre.
Did he give you a good one?
He was a nice guy.
He gave you a good one?
It was a mixed bag.
Really? Wow.
So that's for that very reason, probably.
We should go to letter grades on these too, since 1UP changed across the board. I should email Simon and suggest,
and then we can haggle with you.
Sean Elliott gets a B minus.
Why so low? So that's so played out, but yeah. it's I don't know, man. It's evergreen. It works.
Room for comments.
It's played out, but now it's coming back.
Yeah. It's retro.
Been so out. Now we can use it ironically.
You know what? We had some guy send a reader mail the other day, complaining about the switch to letter grades because he said, and this is, he said this, like, he's all I'm Asian and I get all A's and anything below an A looks like it sucks and I hate it.
Jeff's all like feeling uncomfortable. He was clearly joking. He was having fun at the expense of stereotypes, Jeff. It's okay to laugh.
Oh, that goes.
That's
it is? Okay.
Yes.
He needs permission now.
So crazy over
I am. We've had a couple incorrect comments.
This is just what the guy said in his email. But
okay. Yeah,
crazy overachievers, not fans of letter
grades. Well, okay, fine. So
a B might as well be an F.
Well, he would feel that way with a 9.
Yeah, with a 5 or something.
Yeah.
Well, now that we're on the topic of letter grades and underachievement,
yeah,
maybe we could bring up Turning Point, otherwise known
sure.
as Janking Point, the fall of frame rate, because it's Turning Point, the fall of liberty.
And yeah.
It's
who made this game?
Spark Unlimited.
Okay.
At Codemasters published.
And you reviewed it?
A moment of silence. I didn't review it. No, we
haven't touched it.
Oh, Rory reviewed
it. I don't know if we're, I guess the review should be going up online soon. So,
is it?
Or
it
maybe
should.
Not. It's
he
short.
Didn't like it.
That's not getting a good score.
And I went and played through the entire thing as well. And yeah, I didn't think very much of it either. The thing with this game that makes it interesting, though, is that the developers, the CEO of Spark Unlimited, Craig Allen, has been online with videogamer.com defending the game, which is cool. Totally fair. I understand that. But it's kind of odd. I wanted to like compare some of his statements with what I got out of the game. So to videogamer.com, he says, you know, I think that when you try to do games that are about a mass market, and Turning Point is definitely a high concept idea, that with the time and money we had, we did the best to execute on. Our target was not really the core gamer. So I mean, that's pretty confusing right there. I don't understand. He's going back and forth between it is supposed to be a mass market game, and yet it's a high concept, but then our target wasn't the core gamer. So core, is that like the hardcore gamer?
Core,
I mean,
core means hardcore, and the mass market is the Walmart crowd.
When I think of core, that makes me think of like his main constituency, you know, it's
right.
Like, this is the body of my business. So then that's where my confusion is there.
Core, the people who shop.
So
at
he's
like
actually
ED.
Saying we made a Walmart game.
So, but it's really high concept, which he reiterates when he says Turning Point. The idea there was really a high concept idea. I think we're finding that the people who look at it like, is this going to be fun? Something I can drop into in a world I haven't seen before and have a good time. Really love the game. People that are looking at it with a more critical eye of, is this game revolutionary? Is it doing play mechanics I've never seen before? Is it driving new technology? Well, it was never meant to do those things. If people look at it the right way, I think they really enjoy what they see. You can certainly look at it and say it's not revolutionary, so those opinions are certainly a lot more critical. Now, I don't know. He might be responding to a specific review that I am not aware of, and maybe they, I don't know, maybe they were reactionary to it and saying that it was supposed to be a revolution. It was supposed to be what Half-Life 1 was when it came out. But I don't know. That's not the impression I got. In the number of reviews I did scan, I saw everyone was more or less on the same page in commenting on the fact that the game is a janky mess that should not have been released, you know? And he does say that. I mean, given their budget and given the time they had, totally understandable, right? So I don't, you know, I don't want this to be, you know, too snide. But at the same time, from the consumer's point of view, and I'm assuming the mass market consumer as well, the thing is a fucking mess, you know? So especially if you get it on PC, this is what you're treated to. When you start the game, after you get through all the loading screens and, you know, all the splash screens, instead of being able to use your mouse to select the options or anything like this, you have to use your arrow keys on your keyboard and then the enter key to pick one. So the message already is, oh, yeah. Someone wanted this on PC, too.
We've seen
Earl, can you get this thing on PC?
Yeah, you got till 4.
Right.
I mean, we've seen this before with PC games, right?
This happens, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
but should we clarify that this is, in fact, a Games for Windows game?
It is in the Games for Windows branded package.
Awesome.
And that's a whole other story, because what exactly does that mean?
Well,
what,
those what of us who use Games for Windows
no
don't really
quality.
Use our mice.
Yeah. Right.
So then when you start to play the game, it uses Unreal Engine 3, and while Epic is obviously very familiar with their engine and knows how to make, you know, put it to phenomenal use, I'm seeing more and more other studios aren't, you know, they don't have that same, you know, intimate understanding of how to work with the engine and to sort of circumvent its limitations. And one of those is that...
Well, isn't that what Dennis Dyack was suing them for? Basically,
that
the
probably,
lack of support for the stuff that Epic seems to be able to do with it?
Right. That could very well be the case. I don't know. I mean, I shouldn't comment on that because I really don't know.
I think that was the gist of the description I've seen.
But I've seen, all I can attest to is that now, having played several games that use the engine, it's clear that many studios are having a hard time with it. But then again, I don't know. Is it Epic's fault? Is it their duty to make sure everyone makes a great game with their engine? You know, I mean, I have no idea how that falls out. It'll be interesting to see where that goes. But so one thing about the game is that it dynamically streams in, you know, the data as you're playing. So what on the positive side, it means, unlike Half-Life 2, where people complained about these load periods, you go through an X amount of game and all of a sudden you come open a door and it says loading and you have to wait. People really didn't like that.
Which is ridiculous because you didn't have to wait for that long, especially compared to most other games.
With low RAM, you did. That was a fair criticism of Half-Life 2.
Okay, well, maybe I just always had enough RAM.
Enough RAM, yeah, you could sit there for a while. I mean, of course, we're not talking about any more than, you know, 5 minutes max, but that's a long time when you are playing a game. That's a very long time. So anyway, this engine streams it in dynamically, but what happens then is that you're going to have some chugging and slowdown as it's processing all this. So like Epic, what I assume they do is this is when they choose to make it a downturn in gameplay where you're talking on, you're getting a transmission and you have to walk slowly, or they throw a cutscene or something. It's not when they kick off like the mother of all battles. I don't know why I'm using a Saddam Hussein term, but when they kick off some big some big conflict. And in this game, what happens is every time you open a door, the door opens and you got three grenades flying at you and a bunch of just like almost 100% accurate enemy fire coming your way. And then the game's like, boop, 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 boop. And then by the time it resolves itself, the shit's already blown up in your face and you've died and it's killed you. And it's happening the whole time. So as you're playing, people come by and you're like, dude, can your computer handle that? And it's like, well, yeah, it can't. Just watch. Wait a second as the textures come in and all this other stuff happens, and then it'll be fine. So that's another technical thing. Other technical issues it's really inexcusable is that, you know, it's a game with doors that you can open and elevators that you can use, but you don't open all doors. Some are just locked, and you don't go in all elevators. There are a few that are there. And you know that you're able to interact with them because a little icon of a hand will appear on the screen as you mouse over it. And that solves it. So that tells you, don't stand at this door for 10 minutes trying to figure out how to open it because it's not going to open. Move on to somewhere else until you find a door. But what happens, though, is that it's coded in some weird way that there might be an elevator switch or a door that you legitimately can interact with, but it's you won't get the icon unless you hit the precise pixel. So it's like old school adventure games, you know, the pixel hunting and shit. You have to do that, and then it's off by the equivalent of yards in the game. So like there's an elevator switch, and Anthony here is a witness, so I called over to see this kind of stuff. And it's actually maybe like 2 or 3 feet, you know, like a full yard over to the right of the elevator thing and up a little bit, and you have to do these very, very like precise mouse movements and search around, and then you get it. And then when you do it, you're basically pushing this random part on the wall well away from the elevator. But
so like on your monitor, it would be like inches away?
Yes, yeah, inches away, very, very much. So, hey, it sounds like a nitpick, but it's not, because
not really.
When you're going through the level, and you're like, okay, I need to get to the next area, but then you've run to an elevator, and you said, well, this isn't it. It's not working. There's nothing. You don't interact with this. You go back through the level. And then when you've exhausted all other possibilities, then you say, it's got to be that elevator. I'm going to go on a pixel hunt in there. And then you find it and it works. It happens that way with, you know, ledges and ladders. There's like a ladder. This was the saddest thing. I'm standing right in front of a ladder, and there's just like some one tiny, tiny point where I could bring up the climb ladder icon. And I sat there for, you know, probably like a full minute, just like, eh, creeping around until I could find it.
You got way more patience than me.
Yeah, that shit's annoying.
Is it always consistently off? Is it like 3 inches, like to the right?
No,
in every case?
There were some he would hit dead on.
Yeah, it was very inconsistent, and that's what makes it a real problem.
So it wasn't like you could just go through the game and say, okay, everything's off by 3 inches to the right.
Yeah, like as if you were compensating for like a poorly sighted gun or something, you know, and you just sort of are able to deal with
but
it.
But it's not that.
No. So to go back now, the high concept thing. The high concept is basically revisionist history where the Nazis don't lose World War II. And Winston Churchill dies in the taxi accident in America that he actually survived in real life. And for whatever reason, I don't know, I guess that it's, you know, Chamberlain stays in power and Hitler decides to abide by the Molotov Pact. And eventually they come to America and they, you know, they invade, you know, New York. So I don't know. High concept is funny because, I mean, that's just a staple of, like, what if Hitler won? I mean, that's, like, a staple of any kind of... I mean, that's equivalent of, like, there's a dragon in this dungeon, and he's got his chest of gold.
I don't know, it's like junior high.
Makes like Twilight Zone. Concept.
Yeah.
When the game played, like, worse than Call of Duty 2, like, from what I saw.
And it
Call of Duty Hitler 1 is like the lowest possible hanging fruit, isn't it?
Yeah,
any game concept.
So who's missing that high concept? That I didn't understand. What's interesting is what they do with it is that it begins the game. Certain sections of the game are highly indebted to Half-Life 2 to the point where they're copying it note for note, but not getting it right. So like in Half-Life 2, one of the cool things is that the Citadel. This is one of the first things you see in the game, and it's also where the story ends. It's where you ultimately get to. In this game, they follow that same logic where there's this giant Zeppelin. It's equivalent of, like, the Nazi Death Star, and that's attacking New York, and, of course, that's where you ultimately... It's always in the sky, and you ultimately get up there. And then it's got some weird stuff, though. It's like it's drawing... It's kind of like playing on the emotions of 9/11 by having, you know, when the Nazis are attacking New York, just big wall of smoke will, you know, building will collapse or something, and a big wall of smoke will run down the streets and the people will be consumed by it. And very, very clearly just, you know, taken from that. And then other stuff that's just kind of funny, like HE-111 bombers doing precision attacks on the Statue of Liberty because she's, like, insufficiently fascist or whatever.
Or the fact that, like their new weapons that they invented were just, like, taking actual World War II inventions and then, like, adding a different number to it. So instead of an MP-40, it was, like, an MP-42.
MP-50.
Yeah.
Well, and its improvement was that it's got a flashlight attached to the bottom of it.
And it shoots 3 inches to the right of where you are.
Yeah, I mean, all the stuff, all the tech in that way. Like, if there's a rocket, it's got 3 barrels on it. If there's a tank, it's got 2 turrets on it.
Whoa.
You know? But so as you're playing, what I mean by, like, borrowing from Half-Life is, you know, you have this whole, like, oppressive, you know, power controlling this urban environment. And then you have a resistance group of people there. And you have, like, little... glimpses into, like, the daily life of the occupied people. And it basically wants to do that, you know, where you're looking out windows. I mean, it was like note for note ripoff. There's a part in Half-Life 2 where you're running through sort of the tenement and you look out the window and then a truck pulls up and then they're dealing with the citizens and stuff and there are other people in the room with you and you're like, oh God, what happens? It's basically that, but like it's a Gestapo truck or something that pulls up. But then like the difference here would be the execution. So imagine if in Half-Life, when you have AI allies, and they weren't perfect, you know, they would get in your way now and then. But imagine if they were entirely oblivious to your very existence. So if you were lined up at a window and you're trying to shoot someone out the window, then the AI would just be scripted to go to that window. It would just come and push you out of the way. Like, you just get moved out of the way. As you're sitting there lining up a shot, you're like, dude, I'm about to pull the trigger.
Hold on, I got
to
see this.
And then it moves you. To the extent, it's so dumb that I got to this point when the guys were running through the level. So I just stood in front of one of my NPC allies and let him. He just pushed me through half the level as he was running, screaming for me to follow him. I'm just standing there as he's like pushing me, bulldozing me through the level.
What would have happened if he pushed the other way?
Dude, he's got a script to follow.
It's not like what's the comic version of this? When the juggernaut, the unstoppable force, meets the blob, the immovable object. In this world, the guy just wins. The NPC, it doesn't matter.
If he kept your finger on the W key, he would have just kept going.
You'd have to kind of like strafe to the side to get out of the way. But it's like
and
that.
You can't shoot him.
And the sad thing is that like it's just not even... I mean, most shooters, it's kind of safe territory, right? Because you can only fuck up a shooter so much, and if you get the shooting right, they can still be enjoyable. You're like, it's just fun. For a lot of people, just pointing at something and shooting it is kind of fun in a game. But like, this doesn't even get that right. The guys die. There's this very, very noticeable transition from them being animated to like an instant ragdoll, but not with like the speed or anything of like the way that the transition happens in Half-Life. It's like this really weird and bizarre. It's like you just turn up, their brain just shuts off, like when they get hit in the leg or something.
They do like the classic like cowboy thing where they get shot and then like grab their stomach type thing and then like really slowly fall forward.
But there's not even like falling, it doesn't even match up that way. It's not like, you don't get the sense like I shot this guy here, he's feeling it there, and then he's going to fall in this direction. It's like they fall in any which way, and then they get stuck in the walls or they float in the sky. And
or they just disappear as soon as they die.
They'll disappear.
Maybe they're magic Nazis.
Yeah, it's Nazi magic.
It's like, it probably is, man.
That's why it's high concept.
That, but that was the turning point.
It's just not fun to, it's just not even fun to shoot him. It's like half the time it doesn't, like, am I hitting this guy? Like, what's happening?
So why are we picking on this game? Because it seems it's kind of like a little.
Because it got a C+ on one.
I'm talking about it just because I played it for something, a PC game that came out last week to talk about on a podcast that's ostensibly about PC gaming.
I'm not asking you to be defensive. I'm just saying it seems.
I'm telling you how it is.
It just seems like a kind of a.
I've seen a lot of commercials for this game.
Really?
It could have been pretty cool. That as played out as that scenario is, it's still it. I don't know. I mean, it's still different, right? From other games. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, there are not many. I don't know of any other, like, shooters, FPSs in the past few years that have basically run through this scenario. And it's, I mean, I don't know. They did some things right. When you started off, you're like, this might be actually pretty cool. I was wondering. I was like, why was Rory saying he hated it so much?
Mm. What was that game? And Freedom Fighters? Is that the one that.
Freedom Fighters.
The Soviets won. Yeah, that had a similar, not the same parties involved, but a similar like what if scenario.
Yeah,
and that was a good game.
And that was totally fun. That was awesome. I mean, that was one of those games. The guys that made Kane and Lynch. When I was like before Kane and Lynch came out, I was excited for it. You know, like, hey, these guys that made this game.
I think the thing that bothers me the most is that it's a Games for Windows game.
That's the weird thing about it. Yeah, that I mean. And other stuff, you know, the whole PC interface. It's like, yeah, you can't, if you want to switch weapons, you have to use the mouse wheel. You can't press your number keys to switch between your inventory. Just other, like, basic stuff. There's no, you know, you can't quick save. Can't do any.
I mean, maybe that's why, like, the one for 360 got, like, a C+, because maybe it was just designed so heavily for console. I don't know.
I was playing another Games for Windows title that was a console port over the weekend. I got really way into Viva Pinata again. Mm-hmm. And it's got the same.
The PC version.
Yeah, and that's by Microsoft. So you would assume that they would put in the effort to maybe.
Right, there's not even one degree of separation. It's direct.
Yeah, it's got the same issues, though. It's got, like, they added a few predetermined hotkeys to, like, go into certain menus. Mm. But you can't reassign any of them. There's hotkeys that should totally be there for this game.
Because it's just nested menus.
Just like, I want to go straight to the frickin', you know, seed store. But you have to move your mouse up to the yellow button, which is still left over from, you know.
You can't just bind it to H or something.
Yeah, and you can't rebind any of your, like, shovel icon. It's a little better. It's, like, the camera controls, at least they tried a little bit, and at least they did give you three predetermined hotkeys, so you don't have to go to the radial menu every time.
How long does it take to make it so that you can control a pointer with the mouse? On a menu, though.
No, that bare minimum effort.
Like, that's sad. That's the weird thing. I mean, like, that's like another. You take it for granted. You got a PC game, you can configure the keys in any way you want.
Mm-hmm. And with this initiative, too, basic. The whole point was to try to have some standardization here and some, like, guarantee of quality. So the fundamental thing of not even being able to select with a menu, I mean, how is that not just, like, an abject failure?
Right.
To have that branding.
Yeah, Viva Pinata at least gives you that. So, it's bad.
I mean, there's like, there's all kinds of stuff, right? They're in a situation where they don't want to impose too many restrictions because they're trying to get developers and publishers to go for the branding in the first place. And if they're like, well, we're going to be in control of all these things and you have to meet all these different criteria, then that's just going to be, and then if the publisher's like, well, this is just a heap of extra headache for us, and right, and so far there's no statistics that show this branding is going to increase our sales, why bother? So Microsoft really had to say, hey, let's go forward with this and just, you know, we'll put the brand on your box, and you just have to.
Then it's a Microsoft.
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying
hi, this device that's been around for 25 years.
I'm not excusing it. I'm saying I just mean to acknowledge that, like, that's the only reason I can see for it. But then the downside now is that the branding is absolutely meaningless. It says nothing to you.
It communicates.
If anything, he's right. It's tainting it. Now they're just going to play those and be like, fuck Game for Windows games.
It's just going to be another one of those that reminds me to plug in the 360 controller I'm supposed to buy.
Mm-hmm. Hey.
Yes.
That Anthony did just give me a good idea. If fuck Games for Windows becomes kind of the new mantra, then we could just be FGFW radio.
I think we can.
And that
was
my last podcast.
Your last official word is. Yeah.
She's writing up here.
So are there any redeeming qualities? I mean, the high concept here, I guess. Is that
you're
redeeming?
Trying to find some ray of sunshine.
I'm looking for a ray of sunshine here.
I don't know. I
like Zeppelin.
By the time I finished it, I agreed with Rory that it was like,
never recommend it under any circumstance to anyone.
Yeah. I mean, at least for the price it is now.
To put words
I mean,
in your mouth.
If it, I don't. Yeah.
No, that was the last line really of his review. It. Last so line of his review.
Is this a full? Like, yeah. Is this a full price game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. Yeah, it's supposed to be a major release, and it's a lot of people have been, you know, when you look at the buzz meter on 1UP, it's been, you know, like in the top 10, top 5.
That's because there's a lot of how the fuck it got a C+.
There's a lot of marketing behind it, for sure. So obviously that could be speaking to it, like,
right. And
like,
it was a game that there were cover stories on it. I think it was like PlayStation Magazine or something. One of those had a cover story on it, and it was, I mean, again, I feel bad for them. I mean, they're clearly working under, you know, imperfect circumstances. They had, you know, various conditions they had to deal with, but that at the end, it just doesn't mean much to the consumer that they're saying that the game is for, when they're saying that the reviewers are getting it all wrong.
Well, right.
I don't think anyone was wanting it. I was like, this doesn't need to be revolutionary. This does not, like, again, it doesn't need to be Deus Ex the day that it came out. It's like, just make it work. And if it's dumb fun with, like, and you're having, you know, a decent time with the scenario, then that could work. And the other problem is, you know, right, you set up this environment. You're like, what would happen? What would happen to the various, I mean, because, you know, especially NYC, the demographics are, you know, very diverse. What would happen if the Nazis really did get in here? What can the people that live there expect to see on a daily basis? How is all this going to play out? And it's very, you know, serious and dark subject matter. But the other thing is that because the game, the characters look so shitty and they're so unable to act, you know, in a traditional sense, to deliver any kind of lines when you're looking at them. Maybe if you just hear someone talk, and it just kind of throws all that possibility for storytelling and digging into that out the window. Because when you look at someone and he's telling you something, all you can do is laugh at his face. Mm-hmm. Did you say something?
how like dark is it trying to get? Is it like explicit?
It's not very. There are a few scenes where you see people in the street, and they're, you know, they're being shot, but it's like, it doesn't really go anywhere. It's not, they're just regular white people. It's not like you see blacks or Jews or, you know, anything like that. I was waiting to find, you know, characters that sort of spoke to the richness of, you know, the ethnic makeup of New York City, even in, you know, set in 51. And I saw there's one black character in the whole game, and then everyone else, as far as I could tell, they're almost like the same character model. You know,
is it all in New York City?
Yeah.
No, doesn't you go to the White House?
Oh, you know, you go to England. You go to what is the deal with this shit? You fight on Big Ben and on the London Bridge. For some reason, they decided
you fight on Big Ben.
Yeah. And
are you fighting V?
The Nazis decided to park all of their tanks on the London Bridge. And so there's a scene where you pull the lever, and it's like a drawbridge, and then all the tanks slide off. But they're parked at all these like crazy angles on it, and when they're supposed to be, you know, sliding off and blowing up,
they slide like cardboard boxes.
It's worse than like a fucking action scene in Godzilla from, you know, like 1955 or something. You know, where it's like the dumbest models of fire, Black Cat firecrackers popping off in them. It looked worse than that, right? There's a tank and it looks like it's sliding at about all of a half a mile an hour, and it touches like some other vehicle, and then they just burst into flame, and then they're falling off, but it's like moon gravity as they're falling off a bridge. And
the London Bridge is a powerful thing.
So yeah, you do get to. I was wrong. You do get to go to.
You go to the White House, and all the pictures of Lincoln are on the floor and shit that.
Yeah, there's a president. There's a collaborator president. And he's just this fat guy, and he's a boss. So that means he can take like 3 clips. And I guess that
you have to shoot the president.
Yeah, well, he's not a real. He's not my president. He's just a collaborator. You know, he's like
he's.
He's just another Nazi puppet, and he's just
what's his name in
fat
the game?
Piece of shit. Remember? I was too eager to shoot him to listen to his name. Uh-huh. He's a turncoat. He welcomed the Nazi embrace.
Anyone is a traitor.
Fuck that guy. But he took a little few too many bullets though for my liking. It's one of those things, you know. Yeah, this happens in a lot of games. It happened in Soldier of Fortune Payback. Mm-hmm. Be like, how are we going to have a boss in a game that's supposed to, that you're for right. the most part, grounded in reality or some right. version of it? Well, you just increase their hit points. And instead, what happens is you have in Soldier Fortune, you have an Arab or an Afghan, or in this game, you have like the Turnbull president running around talking shit at you as you just shoot him in the face over and over again. And he can't do anything. He has no like cool behavior. He's not like ducking or dodging your bullets, another superhuman feat. He's just sitting there like, ah, and you're like, okay, I see.
So this president doesn't like grow like twice his normal size, like halfway through, should. Get a ring of fire around him.
He's got a big apparatus where he has to go get injections every like 25% of his health bar.
Or he feeds. Eight tentacles.
He yeah. feeds on like human embryos and like Coke 24 packs. That's from, you know, read the Frank Miller and Jeff Darrow graphic novel Hard Boiled?
No.
Anyone should. In this room?
It's on my no. like pile of shame, basically.
It's a really crazy graphic novel, but there's like this big guy who runs some crazy corporation, and he's plugged into a machine, and he's like the guy that has to get around with like a giant mechanical wheelchair, but it takes it to such an extreme that he's like far bigger than Baron Harkonnen in Dune or something. Mm-hmm. And he's got like, you see all these slide racks that are running into feed him and are being processed to liquids and shit that go into his body, and it's just, you know, hundreds and hundreds of Coke cans and a bunch of like fetuses and just all kinds of baby Ruths and all this random shit.
Could be a one-up like employee.
It's like the end of BioShock.
A couple of guys upstairs kind of look like that.
I've been waiting for someone to make a game based on Hard Boiled. It would be it's this crazy dystopian world. And like if you were to make like a Grand Theft Auto type game, that's the other thing, right? With that kind of game. Like a GTA, you have this world, and there's a few people that have done things with it, but it's for the most part, everyone is trying to cash in specifically on that same formula.
Sure.
So it's got to be thugs and stuff. But take anything like that and take the same principles of the game and then just use, because what those games do well is communicate a space, a world.
Well, that's what Crackdown did. You weren't a thug in that.
But Crackdown was just basically dial the random year generator up about like two decades. And then it's still GTA. There's still like the little town, like where the Latinos fight. There's like the little like triad Asian town. There's the Russian mafia. I mean, it's basically GTA with incredible Hulk style jumping. I think it's a great game. I think it's absolutely fun. But the story of it, though, it's not that different from.
Okay, that's true.
Well, it's like there's thugs of along, you know, different mafias along like very clearly divided ethnic lines, and you go to their little boroughs and
kill the
big ones.
But I'm just saying, you don't do like the thug crimes.
There's thug crimes. You don't, but they're. I mean, it's still, you're the cop in this case.
Yeah, it's a good twist. It's high concept.
It's a twist.
It's high concept. Yeah. Too high concept
for me, apparently.
Well, the Sims 3 is going to be a virtual open world. Like how I did that?
That was the best segue I've ever heard.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Except it gets ruined when you pointed out that it was such a good segue.
Yeah. Don't say segue because everyone, there's so many people on the internet that I see. It's like the new bias. You know how there's like about 10% of internet users can properly conjugate the word bias?
Yeah.
Now segue appears S-E-G-W-A-Y.
Oh, like this little scooter?
Like the pun
half
that they
the internet
they made on.
Is going to be retarded about everything. Remember when we were in Company Heroes the other day and that guy kept on trying to be really racist and call people diaper heads?
Oh, yeah.
He kept on saying D-I-P-E-R until Rory just lost it on that dude.
Sad.
Well, the next time you do feel like writing some kind of internet flame, know that it's spelled S-E-G-U-E.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Get
That's
it right.
A little spelling lesson here. From the editors of GFW Radio.
And
Segway.
For the old one, do not write "you are bias" or "he is bias."
Right. Also, if you're playing World of Warcraft, they're not rouges; they're rogues.
And it's not
a Chaos. R O G U E.
All right.
It's not the forces of Chaos, and they're not Chaos emeralds.
All right. Well, how do you get? It's Paladin, right? Because I always hear people missay it all the time too.
What?
Paladin.
Paladin. No,
really?
I'm totally serious.
You know, it's Paladin.
Paladin. Shaman. Well, I want to let
you talk
on Sims, but there's one other thing that fits this, and it's a unique problem. It's when we play games like Company Heroes where there are a lot of German words. And then there's the matter of like, will it be douchey if I say Fallschirmjäger or if I say like Jagdtiger?
Oh,
or should
I
just say, or there's someone in the server saying Jagged Panther, and you're like, you know that ain't right.
Right.
But it's kind of like, douchey to correct them. It's like that's. It's like, you know, Notre Dame.
Have,
sure,
but I think the same Notre shit Dame, in yeah. World of Warcraft when someone's like, "Kill Jaden," and then someone's like, "It's kill Jadeen."
But I think at the same point, that's like why when we're playing Company Heroes, everyone like just goes into their fake German accent to make it like funny that they're actually saying it the right way.
Yeah, we're that's how we negotiate.
Fallschirmjäger.
That's like, that is perfect. That's what we do. That's I never that's thought about it. That. Like that's how we get
that's
around.
The good
it.
Middle ground. Make light of it. So yeah, The Sims.
Sims 3, right? So we could talk about that now because the embargo is lifted.
Oh, like a veil.
Oh. And yeah, so there it's GTA. It's Sims GTA. There, could I have
you could not
you, more false assumptions now?
What does that mean? Yeah, you go into strangers' houses and pee in their toilets.
It doesn't mean anything. Yeah. You got different neighborhoods.
Rolling hard, just like style.
Just like in GTA, you got the neighborhoods of people who wet themselves. You got the neighborhood of people.
Excellent fishermen.
Yeah, right, right. No, I'm just kidding.
No, okay.
It's not like this at all. We should talk about it for real.
Can you kill hookers?
Yeah, so that was their first directive.
Can let you be a hooker?
Let Sims players
well, that's
kill.
That's what GTA's all about.
Killing hookers.
Stealing cars.
Okay, thanks, Sims Jack 3. Thompson.
Yeah, there's right. not even like cars to steal in this game.
Right.
So,
but what's so great about this game?
Okay, so if you played The Sims or The Sims 2, you know that basically you're playing one house at a time, and it's in like a little instance, to use an MMO word. Because they were using MMO words a lot during our visit there.
They certainly were.
Basically, your four people exist in a bubble. And when you call people over to visit, to socialize or whatever, they kind of exist for that brief amount of time and then vanish and go back to their cryogenic chambers to go back to sleep. So the whole thing here is you got the whole town kind of simulating at the same time. So, you know, use your scroll wheel to zoom into your house, use it to zoom out, and you can see the whole, you know, all of your neighborhood and all the people walking around and the downtown area. So that's right, the big. That's like the big.
How many of those citizens can you control directly?
You're controlling one household at a time.
You still only control yourself, just like or the people in your house, just like you do in the other Sims games. The difference is that all these other people in the town are evolving along with you. They're living. They're going on their own things. They're interacting with one another, mm-hmm. and they all have their own little stories. But if you get involved with them, you will fundamentally change whatever's happening in their little story.
For example, like say if you hook up with another one of them,
right?
It's true Sims dating style. Then you could go and spy on them and see that they might actually be
cheating on you.
Yes, when doing in fact, totally. That will happen. Or you could actually steal. That you could hook up with somebody married in one of the other houses, steal the dude's wife, get a new house in, you know, in that town, and then see what happens to that guy who's been dumped right. over time.
Yeah, and you could do this on a very controlled level in the other Sims, because you could bring in other households and go to, you know,
that's
and interact with
say,
them,
like,
but they kind of went on the shelf in between when you weren't
right.
directly.
I mean, one thing is that literally, I mean, they're aging with you. So in the old, in Sims 2, which introduced the aging concept, you would age. But the rest of the world wouldn't. So, you know.
You could theoretically
you
be older than your
in
dad.
You were a world of vampires, man.
Basically.
yeah, it's like, what is that, I Am Legend?
It's like a new,
totally the
new
only
Anne Rice.
Yeah, so the town will evolve over generations along with you.
So what happens if you do, say you do hook up with someone else, then like you decide to get married, you have the option, it sounds like, to then control the new household, like say
like
you wanted to
at the same
to.
Time, like both of them.
No, I think you okay. would. The Caribs. Other ones would. I think you would like save an instance of your town if you wanted to keep playing with that other family in like another entire other game, basically. But then you could start a new version with your new little family, and then the other ones would become AI.
So what would happen if like my parents died, and now their house is empty, and I moved on to control like a new family, like? Would there just be an empty house on the block now where the old people died?
Probably. Unless someone else moved in.
Yeah, unless maybe they'd have squatters move
in. Yeah. You know? I mean, it sounds like you have complete control to, like, kick people out and drop people into your universe. So, you know, if you wanted to reseed the house, then you totally can.
How much interaction is there? So, say, for example, this is almost like something out of Fable 2 where you go and... I have to use some crude terms here, but you tap someone's mom and the kid sees.
That's what
like,
this game's all about.
Is the kid gonna like? Is the kid is gonna come and
out?
Egg your house? Can he do anything? Like, is it just that's, like in traditional Sims where someone like you could see that they're sad or that they're happy?
they didn't.
This kid likes
imply
it.
That they would go. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, you never know.
He'll say way like, to maybe, go and simless.
Maybe that's one of his. Maybe that's one of his traits is like yeah. kinky shit or something.
Right.
Well, that's the other thing.
Yeah, but he can't like set fire to your house or anything, right?
You know,
I don't know.
I doubt he.
But the Sims are going to be predisposed to, you know, to judge you, you know, to hate you or like you. It seems like more than in the other games.
Well, they each have. Well, we have to switch gears to another system here. So they're dumping again. If you played The Sims, you know that when you make a character, when you make a new sim, or any sim that exists out there has a series of personality traits that are basically sliders, like neat to sloppy or active to lazy. So that system's gone. They've replaced it with this list. I think they came up with what 80 to 100,
it's
around
80. Yeah,
80 traits, which are basically they pulled them from like Yahoo personal ads kind of things, like loves the outdoors or kleptomaniac or you know.
Those aren't Yahoo personal traits.
Well, no, but the good ones,
right?
Yahoo personal traits. but yeah, they're basically descriptors, and you pick 5 of them. So, but you know, theoretically, if there's a descriptor that's like, you know, arsonist, and also a descriptor that's like, you know, hates to see his mom screwing around on him,
yeah,
then maybe they would put the two together and go behave like that. I don't know what the full list is.
And some of the traits definitely were like, you know, not flattering at all.
Right.
I mean, they had ones that were super, you know, like not cool. At all, you know, inappropriate was one I remember they showed us. So, like that dude would like say the wrong thing at the wrong time all the time. You know,
so they had some interesting before ones. They're ready.
Touch someone before they're ready.
You know, like how in the Sims games, you always had to like work it up. You're like,
sure,
ha, ha, tell you a joke, and then you're like, hug.
Uh-huh. Oh, there's another thing that changed because that's kind of an opt-in thing now. Whereas before, it would totally like any positive relationship, it seemed, would inevitably get into the touchy-feely romantic stuff, no matter what you wanted to do with it. This is now kind of like you have to specifically pick to go down the romance tree, more or less, so you can like be friends with people without like looking in another room and coming back and finding them making out.
Do you get like benefits from this? Like, can you borrow stuff from them? I mean, do you? I'm basically, well, I don't know, maybe I'm looking for the wrong game, but like I like this idea that I'm forming in my head listening to you of like basically Spore, but on a social level entirely between, you know,
a social
Spore meets Desperate Housewives or something.
Right. I mean, that's kind
of. I think there is some of this is informed by Spore for sure, a little bit. I mean, you know, obviously The Sims 1 was Will Wright's game. He is not working on Sims 3, but, you know, they're in touch with him. I mean, obviously, this is the same company still.
Right, and a ton of people from The Sims 2 are working on this one. So it's not like it's a whole new team that just has nothing to do with it.
Right, so I think you can probably find the parallels. I mean, the most interesting thing to me, and certainly, you know, we're talking about this is the first time that we've seen it. There's like so much to do, but what I liked was that there was some ambition going on here.
Yeah.
You know, that there's this, they're clearly trying to do something different. That they were clearly trying to I don't know, in a way kind of seize the game back from the phenomenon just that it had become.
It was just basically dress up dolls.
Right? Yeah, right. And I don't know how many expansions to Sims 2 there were, but certainly more than any of us really particularly needed.
So something small time, even like if you befriend your neighbors and you have good relations with your neighbors, then when you open a lemonade stand or some kind of business, then they're likely to patronize it. And then that's a material feedback because you're going to get more money. And then you can use that on something you want. Or if you're like a shithead to everyone, then they're all going to like ostracize you. And then that there's some consequence for that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the business aspect isn't necessarily one particular element. I don't think you really can open up a business in this one.
That's for expansion.
That's expansion material.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, you can get jobs, obviously, because that's always been part of it. But that's, and it's still jobs. This is something that's always sort of bugged me, but I always saw where they come from, where they're coming from, and why they do this. Is when you go to work, you're essentially like your Sim's off limits at work because do you really want to chop broccoli all day if that's what their job is?
Shenmue,
that's right? What they're. And in my head, I'm like, well, yeah, I think I can think of some jobs where that would be cool. Like, I would kind of want to go to an office and manipulate the office environment and, like, deal with, like, cubicle dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
But they never, And I guess Open for Business maybe touched on that. I never touched that expansion pack, but that's something they're still keeping out of it. It's just like when you go into your office, you're kind of off limits till you emerge from it.
But then that's another like big social space, though.
But what is interesting, though, is that the job tracks themselves are very different now. Whereas in Sims 2, there was a specific way to get ahead in your career. And it was basically like a bullet list or a quest in a way.
Oh, so yeah. You
befriend these five people, do this or whatever. Now it's trait-based. In other words, you can get ahead in a certain career based on what your personality is like. You can play to those strengths. There isn't any particular requirement.
You can like sleep your way to the top.
Exactly. Like, if your trait is like gregariousness or whatever, it's possible that your character will get a raise just by sleeping with the boss. Whereas if you're a bookworm, you'll get ahead by reading and advancing, you know, getting more intelligent in that particular profession.
Right. And then, but your boss is, in this case, you know, when they leave the office building, they're going back to their lives. So like if they decide that they don't really want to sleep with you anymore and they hook up with someone else who works at the movie theater or whatever, then suddenly that could totally destroy your career because like your inn is gone. So it's like that kind of stuff.
Cool. Right. Yeah. And I also like the fact that like it's not randomized at the start of the game for anybody. So we all go out and buy Sims 3 on day one. And that village or that town is the same for every one of us. And yet how it then evolves is going to be totally up to us.
Yeah.
Right. As opposed to,
but it's offline entirely. So there's no way to compare outcomes, right? Unless you go to their house. And
I mean, I think going
at least as of right now,
before we, like when we knew when we were going to go see The Sims 3 and before we had any clue what it was, like part of me was trying to guess what there would be. And one of them would be like, okay, there's going to be some pretty deep in online interactions, or they're going to do something like Sporecast.
The Sporepedias,
yeah. That kind of thing. But that actually, it was surprising that it wasn't a part of it.
They definitely implied that there's going to be
a perfect match for it.
Well, they did say there was going to be user
content. Sure. Yeah, user generated content is obviously huge, and they told us, they hinted that there would be, you know, something like the Sims Exchange where you can put your stuff on a central hub, people can rate it.
Right, but it's not an open dynamic thing like Spore and the Sporepedia, though.
Yeah. I mean, maybe there's time to add that. Maybe they're kind of waiting. They were being coy about it, so maybe that is.
Yeah, they were.
Like, in the cards, maybe, if it works out for Spore, since they have enough time.
Right.
I would think that watching Will Wright's game and how that does.
And just strip that, the whole, you know, package of technology from the one and put it
they
in the
could,
other.
Yeah,
the
theoretically.
That, like, with so that, EA's, like, character customization options in Tiger Woods, they were then able to loan to some of their other games, you know. Mm-hmm.
So that part of me suspects that might be why they were playing coy and why this wasn't a big deal at this time in this game's life cycle, which is still, like you said, way early. It's coming out spring 2009 or something. Yeah. Is that what they said?
Did you guys all play the Sims games?
I did.
No. Yeah.
The most recent one I played was Sims 2 Castaway.
So you play the expansions?
Well, the Castaway one was actually like for PSP and PS2. It was like its own standalone thing. But
so because I got into the Sims 1 a ton.
Sims 1 I got. Yeah, Sims 2 I played
Sims
a lot
2
of.
A ton, but never. I was always done by the time even the first expansion came
Yeah,
out.
I never went into expansion.
So I like never really experienced what was in those.
But the thing that I didn't like about them that I think you guys said in your preview that they changed was like the way you always had to manage like your cleanliness, how hungry you are, and all that. Didn't you guys
they
made it easier or something?
Yeah, they've
I think there's been some misunderstanding online from people who've read our story that there is no more peeing, like, and that's not true at all. What happens is in the, you know, the last couple Sims games, all your Sims have these very obvious discrete bars that fill up, like as they need to pee, the bar slowly fills up until the bladder is full, and then you go to the bathroom, the bar drains. So you're like constantly watching these eight different, like it's like plate spinning. It's just like, okay, now they need to eat because the hunger bar is way at the top. So you just gotta
And you could just get in this four endless things. Circle of topping off the bars.
Right. Yeah. And so you can spend your entire like game day just like dealing with going to the bathroom and showering. Mm-hmm. And it's really easy to get obsessive compulsive about
yes.
that stuff. They're simplifying it down to three bars. The kind of the main one is like fun versus stress. And they're dealing with like bladder by keeping that behind the curtain. So I'm assuming there's still some metric that you don't see that you know,
right.
determines that they're going to have to pee soon. But then when it's time to pee, you basically get a buff. It's like suddenly all of a sudden you get a little icon over your sim that says, I need to pee. And then until you address that.
So the difference is like a real person, you're like, oh, I got to take a leak. And someone who spends the entire day like, oh, God, I'm going to have to go pee in 4.5 hours. Oh, my God, I'm going to have to go pee.
Three and a half hours.
Yeah, exactly. That's the difference.
Which is a lot more natural to me, at least yeah. in most cases.
When I tried, the one experience I had with Sims 2, I tried on Xbox. Because I remember at the time a bunch of people at EGM where I worked were into it. Damien and Jen and stuff. And I tried it for like 5 minutes and it was horrible. It was like the character just had to, it was like upset because he had to go to the bathroom or something. I'd go to the bathroom and he was still pissed off. And he like, I was like, he needs to sleep. So I was asleep and he's still pissed off. And I was like, he needs to sleep more. And I just kept trying to sleep. Then like by the time he got up from that, he had to go pee again. And I was like,
eventually,
what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
It's like taking care of like that shittiest pet that anyone could have ever.
I think that's what
like
they're trying to get away from. Because
narcoleptic pet. I hated it.
I think. I mean, they're trying to get away from that because the problem really was the beginning of the game was really about that. No matter what, I mean, and eventually, by going to work and getting a better job, you bought new furniture that filled those things up faster.
And so you get them made so you don't have to clean your house yourself.
But the beginning was really about the bottom level of the human needs pyramid. Uh-huh. It was just like, you know, dirt. Not dirty. Sleep. No, not sleepy.
Yeah.
Caveman level stuff.
Also, they've broken the fourth wall a little bit with some of the stuff, like especially like with the cleanliness. And I guess they debated it for a long time. And, as you can read in our story, they stumbled upon this sort of by accident of design. But this notion that, you know, if their house is a mess and they're the type who's whining about the mess, when they're off doing something, you, the player, can actually clean up their house themselves.
Like the elves?
Yeah, you can be the magic elf so it's clean for them when they get back.
Yeah.
Which before they never wanted to do that. They never wanted to have that kind of hand of God in here. But then they discovered through an accident and through playtesting that people were like kind of glad they could just do that now.
I would intentionally, in like The Sims 2, make sure all of my Sims had their neatness category just like all the way down. Because otherwise they'd just be freaked out by a dish. And they just have to like, and it takes them longer to put a dish in the sink than it does to do any other task in human history because the pathfinding was just so bad. They're just like,
right.
It sounds like
it takes like 2 hours of like human time.
Right. So they actually talked about how the fact that that system that they had in the old days, those sliders, basically forced you into picking a mid ground so that your sim wouldn't be too high maintenance.
Right.
Because
so
like Sean's saying, if you had him be neat, he was just going to be a fucking pain in the ass. He's going to be like the ultimate Felix Unger sort of whiny, you know. Well, sorry. That was an Odd Couple reference. You guys are
I got it.
Okay. Sean's like, huh?
Walter Matthau, Jack Lemmon.
That was the movie.
We're talking about Walter Matthau.
Hey, we're talking about the Sims.
You're talking about someone who's older, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not even talking about the movie. We're talking about the show.
Yeah. So
let's introduce ourselves.
Right. So that, you know, now they're saying you can be those extreme. You can be an extreme of one sort or another, and the game can still work for you.
Yeah. I like the trajectory that they're taking. Like, because that rudimentary game we're talking about where you basically have this organism that has to pee and it has to sleep and it likes to be clean. It's like, I mean, that's like the dullest part. If you're looking at a game where you could potentially in the future when you're focusing on, you know, interpersonal relationships and just like how people influence one another, how they get their way, what, you know, larger goals in life than, you know what I'm saying? Like
certainly those things were there in the first couple Sims, but yeah, it was kind. You could get overwhelmed by those fundamental needs. I mean, but I think given the restrictions that you know that there were at the time on AI and other things, I mean, they did a pretty good job of you know, quote unquote, people simulating.
I would always in my household, like if I had like two people who I was like, this is the couple I want to make. I want to do these guys. I would inevitably make a third person who is just basically a housekeeper. to deal with all that other shit.
Yeah.
Right. And
just
also,
like, basically make a maid and it just totally
broke. And
don't
discount the, you know, the quote unquote emergent gameplay that came out of The Sims. I mean, you know, so much of the fun was just like fucking with these people, you know, like, you know, walling them in, you know, the torture angle.
Right.
You know, that kind of stuff was a huge part of
it. Letting them go in the pool, then pulling the ladder out.
Right.
Watch them drown.
So just the sheer torture element has always been fun. So.
True.
And I don't think that they're getting away from that, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
So you can't kill hookers, though.
No, Ryan, you can't kill hookers. You'll have to find another game for that particular perversion
Sims
of yours.
Murder expansion.
Do they make any use of, like, the internet as a theme? Or, like, you know, BlackBerries and just, you know, modern telecommunications?
I didn't see anything
in the new expansion, Free Time for Sims 2, they added that kind of stuff. Like, if you... I'm actually addressing your question, but they did add the existence of that just in terms of, like, if you get into a particular hobby, you know, if you become whatever, a book nerd, comic book nerd, at some point in your leveling up of this hobby of yours, you will get the ability to blog about comic books.
This is why, like, I'm thinking of after I played Forum Wars, which is this game, I was talking about it on one of yours, but it's got all this potential in that it basically operates as a top to bottom simulation of, like, internet use. So there's fake instant messengers in the game, there's fake email accounts, there's, you know, spam sites, forums, and all this stuff. And when you're playing it, it's all flash, and it's like it's easy to believe, though, that you're in some alternate reality version of the internet where these things can happen. And that just seems like that idea, they're onto something, even if Forum Wars itself right now isn't like all that it can be. Mm-hmm. Like, to take that idea and you could just throw it into other games.
Well, that's
like
kind
you
of
could
what,
throw that entire package.
Majestic,
into,
was that what that was called? That EA game that aborted?
To an even greater extent, the way they would email your real email account, and they might leave. You might get messages
that's
on your
Majestic
real phone.
Right.
And there's a lot of potential in that. And that kind of is like the ARGs, alternate reality gaming, it sort of went in that direction. But even like this, like the Forum Wars thing, I mean, like if you put that whole thing, because now it's like if you're going to have Sims, you're going to have some like modern life thing, like you got to have the internet in it, and like if they could basically just strip that whole interface, rip it right off of the other and put it in there, and then you could like send messages to your neighbor and stuff.
If that's in there, they didn't touch on it.
I doubt it.
I smell expansion pack. I mean, that's a thing, is they can, that kind of thing, if people are just like clamoring for it, cram it in there. That's what they do, and there will be expansion packs.
Oh yes,
I guarantee it, because like they didn't show if there were pets in it, and that's like the default second expansion pack almost every time is like dogs and cats. Now you have dogs and cats too.
Sure.
Didn't that David Fincher movie, The Game, come out around the time that Majestic did?
Yeah. That predated Majestic. But yeah.
It's the same sentiment. That movie was ridiculous, man.
I liked it.
You did?
Yeah. I was along with
the
ride.
The theme
was over.
It reminded me of Metal Gear Solid 2, where you're like, okay, there's a twist. This is cool. I'm following it. And then we're going to double back on that twist.
Yeah.
And then there's a triple twist and a quadruple twist. And then at the end, I'm like, you know what? I don't fucking care if this is a game or real.
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely
make
that
shit
happened.
End.
Well, yeah. I mean, sure. There were like 8 twists too many. But
there were far too
many.
That
was the twist movie.
Yeah. Yeah, that whole movie.
That came out, but I'm sure that Kojima, that he was a fan of that movie. Because it came out like, I remember like a year or so before MGS2. And I remember when I got that, I was like, oh God, here we go again.
Mm-hmm. I did really like Majestic.
I like the
concept of Majestic. It didn't deliver, but there were some really cool things about it. I mean,
I didn't play it. How intrusive was it? Like, did you have to?
You had to opt into the intrusiveness.
Okay.
Was the thing. You know, at the time that you installed the game, it would say like, "Do you want us to call your phone? You know, do you want to get faxes? Do you want to get emails?" You could opt in for any or all of them.
Yeah,
or opt out completely.
And it would still
so it was
fun.
Totally your call.
That was the last attempt at that kind of a game outside of like, you know, the ARGs that I was talking about.
As far as I know, especially from a mainstream company.
Yeah, there's nothing been at that scale and scope.
Like they should do it again, like you with Lost or something. You know, I mean,
there was
like
Missing.
Oh, Missing did that too. That's right. Missing was an adventure game.
Did it call you and everything though?
No, sent you emails.
Okay. Yeah, they sent you emails, and but mostly it was using the web. Like you would do searches and things like that that used real sites
or sites that
looked real enough. Right. You felt like that's what you were doing.
Okay, I like that idea. It seems like there's a ton of untapped potential there.
Yeah, the problem with Majestic,
I think
it was
tanked.
Like, they couldn't. Yeah, they couldn't fake it enough. I mean, they couldn't. Like, you'd always know, so it wasn't as ominous to you as you would kind of want it to be. Yeah.
Well, that's the catch-22 of the thing. In order to be, like, fully, I hate this word, immersed into it, like, you do want to be interrupted.
You want it to, like, be like the game,
3 in
right?
the morning to yeah. get, like,
yeah, you would want
message.
To, yeah.
But if you're like, don't wake me up. Like, it was the same.
You can opt into, like, yeah. the deluxe, like, collector's edition, and like, they'll send someone to knock on your door at 4 a.m.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And there has to be some, like, accountability.
You like this game? How about if we break your fucking arm?
Midget with a saxophone. I'm thinking more David Lynch. I want, like, a midget with a saxophone and a red cape to show up. Like, yeah. Do a little
Hello,
dance.
Hello, Jeff Green.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, the ability to opt in just kind of kills some of the edge.
Yeah.
But I just think most people would be scared of that for legal reasons, too. I don't know. It just seems like there'd be a lot of scary ground there.
I mean, if you signed a very complicated waiver before you began your game that just said, like, you know, if you receive a call and you have a heart attack, it's not our fault. But yeah, I mean,
being followed by invisible men, life is good. Yeah. Why am I so miserable then?
I mean, that was the
or
same problem
sign
I had
up with somebody else. Like, we could sign Ryan up for Majestic and not tell him.
You know? It's your birthday present,
right?
Then he's Ryan. Like,
that's the that takes us back
show.
To the whole David Fincher thing. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's that's a whole other level. It was the same problem I had with the freaking Tamagotchis.
Oh,
because you're like. If you didn't address its needs, like, right at when you needed it, like, at 4 in the morning. And for a week, when those first things came out, I was obsessed with the idea of it. And I know right now, I'm just like, why am I telling anyone this? But, like, I would get up at 4 in the morning if it beeped and needed its poop cleaned up.
Oh, dude.
For, like, a whole week of my life. And then, like, there was a moment where I was just like, oh, what the fuck
did
I do?
It's
just,
like, one of those things you see, like, on the internet, and you just, like, you just close it.
Uh-huh.
And that's it. You just don't think about it.
When the fuck do you ever see something on the
Didn't
internet
I tell you
that
this?
You close?
Yeah, no kidding.
You don't link.
What do you see
all
that
the
makes
time
you close?
When, dude, we have this whole... It's the usual thing. It's actually sad because it's a version of Rick Rolling, which is the dumbest thing ever. Rick Rolling is just this dumb YouTube music video of a tool named Rick Roll singing a shitty song, and you would just change, like, the URL or whatever and trick people into clicking it. You got Rick Rolled. But our version is to basically... It's always something. It's always some different surprise. But you tell someone it's something else. So invent. You can put your comment in there, and you say, like, "Holy shit, dude! A new screen came out for whatever Diablo 3 was announced." But something more believable.
Yeah.
You know, or more for us, it's more like, you know, Demonious X is a YouTube superstar. We'll be like, "Holy shit! Demonious X posted a picture of his new girlfriend." So then people go and click, and then they hit the surprise.
Get
rid of yeah, this is why I don't click your links.
Yep.
You click
you'll aim me and it'll be like, hey, click this. It's like something. And then I'll click it and it's like some woman with a penis.
You showed Thanks, him
the, that one was a
You
dude,
showed him the big dog?
People don't understand a lot of this stuff. Like the big dog, it wasn't like, it's like a... It's a hermaphrodite. It's like, it's the fact, like, that's immaterial. The shit, it was in the glass. It was that it was the big dog from the shirt. It's like a line of clothing for, like, obese people that want to feel, like, good about being obese. So, but the big dog, he's, like,
I'm
wearing...
I'm sorry I missed the subtlety.
He's wearing, like, Ray-Bans, and he's always got this look on his face, like... You know what I mean? It's like just this knowing look, but reflected in his sunglasses was a hermaphrodite laid out on a car from like if there was like a place where you could have like Budweiser commercials, but for a hermaphroditic audience or connoisseurs of such. And so that the joke wasn't that, dude, it's a chick with the dick, but it was like the big dog has got this badass like look, like, I see that.
You didn't pick up on that joke?
I posted that shit before people, and the response was like, what the fuck? But it, like, it's a whole thing. That came from Something Awful. And they have this, like, there's this thread where people made so many awesome fake big dog shirts, and it would be, like, the big dog with this tough-ass look on his face, and it would say, I don't know, like, don't touch my manga, dad, or, I don't know, stuff like this. It's pronounced manga, you know, I mean, just ridiculous. Like, the weirdest, like, juxtaposition of a supposedly tough dog, D-A-W-G. Nerdiest commentary. So that's where it went. Oh, we did get good mileage out of that picture though, the big dog thing. On the Relic forums, for Company Heroes, there's this weird thing where every once in a while there's a user and he's got some ridiculous like Ubermensch, the Nazi Superman avatar or something. And when you're in that game, we know someone joins the game and they're like SS Sturmfuhrer or something. They're immediately like, how can we fuck with this person? But they're on the forums posting that. And this guy had the most like it was basically just like this really homoerotic image of a Nazi Superman just decked out in swastika and stuff. We're like, where did this even come from, right? So we made Rory response to the guy because he quoted him, but then he took his avatar and then he put that in the glasses of the big dog. posted that, and he got banned for it or something, but like no one understood what it meant, you know? It was just like, I see what you're up to, dude.
All of us
I'm the big dog and I know what's going on here.
All of us in general got a really bad problem of picking on people like the second they come in like that.
But it's that's
like we all think with one consciousness now.
But that's not just like, again, people like want to like shout bullyism or nothing. It's nothing of the sort. Like if you're calling yourself, like they come in there and they're like Garing and Guderian and stuff, like I don't know. I think it's fair to pick on you. That's not being a bully. You're naming, look what you're fucking doing. Look what you're up to.
So they're
you're
asking
yourself
for it.
After fucking Nazis. Like I'm gonna, like if you're gonna do that, then you gotta be down to be clowned on. You gotta be down with the clown.
Yeah. Well, I think if you're gonna play online in general, you gotta be willing to be clowned on.
Well, Company of Heroes, as far as what I've seen, has one of the more like crazy racist like group of players I've ever seen. Like when we go in the chat channel and everyone's like saying shit that I won't repeat.
That, I mean, but isn't there's, that the truth? That any
it's true of everything.
Yeah,
I mean,
God, every
like,
time I ever played Xbox,
but they
Live,
love to talk politics. Like they love it.
Yeah, it's different. In Xbox Live, it's like you know the words will come up. And it's like this and that. But there's like
these people,
the game replays chat
it.
Channel in particular, and every time you go in there, it's a debate about politics or something that devolves into what you think. So it's like you go in there and there's discussion about Barack
Hussein,
Obama.
Osama.
Yeah, and that's going in there. And that's when people are yelling like diaperhead, like D-I-P-E-R. And there's just all this back and forth. And then the real hate terms come out and they're all caps and people just
it doesn't help
arguing.
This is why I don't play online.
The other thing, there's an international audience of players. So you get like Euros and you get Russians and like people from Singapore and all these in South America arguing with each other. And so what happens is a lot of a world image of America and then American self-image are often like confronting one another in this forum of all places.
Yeah.
It doesn't help that certain members of our group that shall remain unnamed egg them on sometimes.
Well, then you regret it.
I wonder who that could be.
Because they're like, yeah, I heard Barack Hussein Osama is a Muslim, but they'll spell M-O-S-L-E-M on purpose.
Well, that's actually the proper old term. So, I mean, the old spelling. So I was spelling
M-O-S-L-E-M.
L-O-M. And then they were, like, trying to correct you. But then their spelling was all wrong. And then, like, the whole point, you're like, okay, I'm going to do this just to show them how dumb this whole thing is and make
them
feel
stupid. But then they get in with it. They're like, yeah, you got a good point.
Yeah, of course.
And then you regret it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Say so, hey, while
I
we're
hate
talking
the internet.
Yeah,
about that, we're going to play the Relic guys at their own game.
Right, except
Thursday.
They're cheating, right? I heard.
Well, we've been asking for this game to happen, and it's always like, yeah, it'll happen. We'll get around to it. But now they tell us that, you know, we'll do it this Thursday. However, they're releasing a major patch with significant balance changes today.
Oh, what a coincidence. And now they're ready to play.
Yeah, giving us like whatever a day and a half or you know an evening and
not
a half.
Not even, yeah, because we're going
to
be working
to prepare.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
so we'll have to. The plan is to
delayed this patch on purpose
just
to fuck with us.
Yeah,
just to, so you lose this match.
Yeah. Honestly,
we're calling you out, Relic.
I just don't picture us losing. Like I just don't think we
can.
Oh, don't say that
shit,
dude.
Man. Fuck that. I picture us losing. I learned the hard way about that. You never if you're ever going to go into any kind of competition, don't go talking shit beforehand.
Dude,
chances are you're going to lose.
I'm just saying every time I think we're going to lose, we always win.
That happens a lot in games, but you got to keep in mind we're playing Relic. The difference is we're not playing
who made the game.
We're not playing their balance team. At least I don't want to. And the thing there is that the balance team, it's their job to play that game 9 to 5.
Break shit.
And to find
to try
everything
every
that you can exploit. Yeah. Yeah. To search for everything that might be overpowered. Dude, that is like, I don't know. If you thought you were cool because you boxed amateur like downtown and then you went up, you start talking shit on the world heavyweight. I mean, that's pretty much what you're dealing
with
there.
Watch your mouth.
Yeah. But maybe we'll win, maybe we won't. I don't know. We have to get used to the game. And it is the other thing is it's bad for us. We can't win because it's going to sound like excuse making if we're like, oh God, we got burned by some of the patch changes. Because if you don't, well, people who play the game will understand that this stuff really matters. But people who don't, it's like, yeah, whatever. You just lost it. Admit it. And of course, you know, that will be how it is.
Of course, if you win, it'll be that much more triumphant.
Yeah, so it should be fun. Well, oh, here's what I was bringing up. We're going to put up, we'll host the replay file so people that own the game can just watch it in its entirety. And then I think we plan on making like a highlight reel for game videos and put that up there with some commentary.
Nice. Cool.
And if we're lucky, we'll record us in TeamSpeak, but we can't tell like Rory and Matt that we're taping them so we can get them going.
Having an aneurysm.
But yeah. All their blue talk will get in there. Can Ziff Davis put that on?
Oh, I'm sure. You just market adult.
Oh.
And then, as always, when you click any video on the internet, how old are you? When were you born?
Oh,
1901.
Yeah. What's the first one? Yeah,
hey, I was going to ask you guys this question. I'm glad you reminded me of that. When you get confronted with that screen, I was born in, do you tell the truth?
No. Why would you?
Most of the time.
That's extra effort.
I don't know why.
You go to your date of birth.
I go to the actual year.
Jeff,
what if it's asking for a specific day and month? That too?
I do that.
The metrics for the site, it says like the key demographic of users are all like
January
1st.
I know there's one 45-year-old
dude. Not a New Year's baby.
46-year-old dude. Everyone's born on January 1st.
Yeah, January 1st, 1900, or usually it's like 1901 is when the thing starts. So that's when I was born. Or if it's just age, it's like 99.
Age gates are absurd.
Just whip the scroll wheel down, whatever it lands on past 18.
Well, it must just be a liability thing, right?
Yeah, that's what it is. For some reason, it gets you out of bad situations to put an age gate. You know,
right? They got in trouble at some point because they didn't have an age gate on some of the Gears of War stuff or something like that.
It's a dude at 7-Eleven selling you a pack of smoke saying, "I didn't sell you these smokes."
Yeah, if you're
and they have no better way to police it. That's like what they have right now. So until there is,
what else would they do?
I don't know. V-chips. We're talking.
Yeah, facial scan or something.
It could get more intrusive.
Retinal scan.
I'm glad that's all it is.
Yeah, right. Menu.
Extra step. I guess if you're two and don't understand what you're about to pull down, then I don't know who it's supposed to stop, though.
Ryan. It stops Ryan.
Very, very, very honest kids. That's
nothing
about
stops
it.
Me.
Nothing stops... Oh, here we go. Nothing stops you from speculating on Lost.
Hey,
uh-oh. Oh, God. We're not doing Lost speculation, are we?
Another one of those segues.
Yeah. We're really doing Lost speculation. Has it come to that
Ryan's
already
got
in
something
this podcast?
To say.
Oh, you have a theory?
Maybe. Are we talking about Lost now? Are we getting into our off-topic stuff now?
Already? Do we have more on-topic stuff?
Well, I don't know if you, Anthony, have you been playing anything else new? Either you guys or Ryan? We could talk about...
I'm playing Fallout 1
Company
again.
Company of Heroes like Fiends. If you want to hear about it.
Yeah. We could have our own podcast.
Yeah. We definitely do. We need to break down our strategies. Like, we have... Maybe I'll just whet your appetite by telling you the names without what they are. But like we've got the Operation Bang Bus. We've got Obesia's Mud Butt.
What?
Obesia's Mud Butt?
Yeah.
And it's funny, too.
These are the names of strategies?
Yeah, because when we see people doing it, that's how we refer to it, too. We're like, oh, shit, he's rolling the Bang Bus. And everyone knows what we're talking about.
They make surprising sense, too. Before... I want to
Can
hear
you
about
explain
Fallout.
Obesia's mud butt then?
But like, okay, let's start the Bang Bus real quick. The Brits' HQs are mobile. They're just these big trucks, bus-like trucks. And they get cruising, and you can power them up. Like one upgrade is like a speed governor, so they drive faster. And when you see one of those cruising, one tactic is at the beginning of the match to pull up stakes on the Bang Bus and to get it up in the front on a good resource point. Mm-hmm. But because when you get up there, then you retreat your troops so that they chase it, and then they're able to go faster than normal
than they ever
to get
should.
There. And then when you fight, the enemy's racing to get there, but you can reinforce from the Bang Bus. So it's just a Bang Bus because it's a bus and it's banging.
Okay.
But Obesia's Mud Butt, it's a classic pincher tactic where on a 2v2, each one of us plays the role of one of Obesia's, the mythical obese woman's... Gluteus Maximus.
And well, that's where you show restraint.
So we smash we pick one of the enemies and divide. It's basically like, pincher movement, divide and conquer thing. And we get him in between the cheeks of Obesia. Mm-hmm. But then in the game, you can retreat. So we get him mashed up in there, and then they're like stuck. And sometimes it might be like a muddy level. We've been doing it on Linden down
in
the swamp.
And then they walk slow too.
And then when they freak out, then they'll retreat, and you'll just see all their troops go flowing out from between the two chiefs of our attack. Sometimes there might be a tank or a vehicle in there. That's like a larger piece of matter.
Oh, my God.
This makes me not want to play.
It should be known that Sean's come up with every single one of these names.
Some are obvious. Like if we have like a bunch of Tetrarchs and we're using those as on the offensive rush, then that's the Tet Offensive. I mean...
Sure.
They're fun names.
Everyone who tuned in because they heard there was Sims talk is now regretting their decision.
They're learning how to play Co.
That's true.
So what about how's Fallout treating you?
The Sims.
First of all, I was amazed that it actually installed because I'd heard that, you know, because this game goes back to DOS Win95 era.
Fallout 1. Okay.
Yeah, I found the disc and I installed it again because of Fallout 3, obviously. I just wanted to kind of remind myself. But it installed and booted up just fine with no worries. So I was happy about that. But gameplay wise, I just, you know, this is it is one of my favorite RPGs of all time. But we have come a long way in 10 years, and it's hard. I wouldn't say it's hard to go back, but it's just because I am enjoying it. But I don't think it would ever fly now. That was the first thing that I noticed.
Well, what about it? Like just the graphics, or?
Well, the graphics are one thing. I mean, and they are, you know, pretty rudimentary for what. I mean, obviously for what we're used to now. I mean, it's 640 by 480, and it's unchanging. You know, you can't do anything. You can't do anything with the camera at all. I mean, there's all that, but that's just a very superficial thing. But just in terms of the gameplay, it really goes back to a time when there was not much hand-holding going on at all. You were just expected to kind of learn by playing in the old days. I mean, that's the thing that is striking me the most. I'm only a few hours into it again, and I played it all the way through twice when it first came out, so I know how much more I have to go. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot here that is just like assumed gamer knowledge. I mean, the only concession there is the, you know, the first little stretch out of Vault 13, you're killing a bunch of rats. But even that doesn't last for very long. And even that, they don't really actually tell you what to do. You know, you kind of either have had to have read the manual or just kind of figure it out on your own.
That's a cool... I mean, that's like a good thing in some ways.
Oh, I am
that's
saying it's a good thing. I'm not saying soccer. It's bad. Yeah. I'm saying that this is a good thing. It reminded me of the time when the developers trusted that you could just... that you would get into this on your own. They assumed a certain level of intelligence.
Well, right. I mean, figuring it out on your own, like, embeds the rule set into your head a little more than, you know, having it told to you and then maybe you don't retain it quite, or why you were just doing that.
Right, and you don't have these, you know, these tutorial missions with the voiceover that treats you like a complete fucking retard.
I guess it's because...
You know, you have now walked to the end of the block. Good job. Now, you know, try lifting your arm.
Press
jump. Great.
Yeah. Press jump to jump.
Yeah. It just seems like maybe back then they just assumed that everyone that played games was like really into games. Whereas nowadays, because so many casual people buy systems, and they're like really trying to make a lot of money.
That's exactly
yeah.
What
it is. I mean, it's just like you saying the other day that like, I don't know, a few hundred thousand doesn't constitute like a financial success anymore. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, right.
Most people weren't buying Fallout from Walmart. They were not Fallout, but games of that era. They were getting it from, you know, Sam's Computer Shack.
Well, it's funny when the Interplay logo boots up for the first time on the game. You know, another company now long gone. It's that old buy gamers for gamers thing is what spins around. And, you know, that used to be something that a game company could say and you knew it was actually true, you know, and that's really how the thing plays. It's like, okay, here's these people who get what an RPG is. They know what is fun and they made it, you know, and you know, you're not going through a series of what feels like compromises to this audience or that audience or whatever. It's like, this is just a straight up fucking hardcore RPG and they're not messing around. The other thing about that is that it's pretty damn slow paced. You know, it's the combat is turn based. You can maneuver through the world in real time, but as soon as there's an enemy within a proximity, the thing switches into turn-based, and you have a certain amount of action points to use per turn in which you could do whatever, reload your weapon, put a stim pack in for health, do whatever. And so every single encounter can take like a while. I mean, depending on your stats, depending on how you're handling the situation. So it takes the pace of the game down to a level that I'm not sure that would fly now. I think people would be too impatient for the kind of game that this is.
That's interesting that that's like true of games, because that's true of like certainly of like film and television. I don't know. I guess like shows like, you know, the resurgence of serial shows like Lost fly in the face of that. But when you look at the way that most movies are edited now, like in the post MTV era, where it was basically just we got used to this barrage of sights and sounds and not even always wholly, coherent. And then you look at like a Stanley Kubrick movie or something, like if you watch 2001 now, like it's great for me. But like younger people, like I try to recommend that to people and they watch it like, dude, what the fuck? Hell, is that spaceship? It starts off, there's a spaceship on one side of the screen, and in the distance, there's like another space station. And then this thing is going to go dock there, but I'm going to have to watch it across this whole screen.
And I got a half hour
remote. Like nowadays, you show a ship, and then boom, you cut to it, like people getting out the door of the ship.
Right, the kind of born movie pace, which of course has its own charms in some way.
Movies
were better back in my day when they were slow.
But it is good to go to now and then. I find it's refreshing to look at something that does use a whole other pace, and that's informed by a whole different set of standards.
Exactly, and that's what Fallout is. And I think, you know, some people who have just been hearing the hype about Fallout 3, or maybe even people who played the original games and went back now, I think would be surprised the way I was at really how slow it is. I mean, to get through one you know, small area of Fallout 1, which is only just one little piece of a big world, can take hours.
Yeah.
You know, which I find fun.
This reminds me in some weird way. You can make sense of the analogy, but I remember I was downtown San Diego, like right after high school, and we were cruising around, and we went to this porn store, and they had like what?
How are you going to get this to relate? I don't know.
Booths. I had to say the age because I was like 19 or something, you know, and it was ridiculous. So we go into this booth, and we're like, dude, what's all this about? And we knew it was about. And you put in a quarter, and you could, and it turns on this movie. Remember, my friend Chuck, he was like, "There's like a woman tied up, so it was like some like light, you know, bondage scene." And he was like, seriously freaking out. We don't have time to watch her get untied. Hurry up, because we only had like, you know, 5 minutes for a dollar.
He didn't need any foreplay, any bondage foreplay.
Yeah. So I just imagine now one of today's kids playing Fallout, and it's like, we don't have time to watch her get untied.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, and so, you know, I just think about it in terms of like the level of criticism. I don't want to get back into the ridiculous, you know, Fallout Flame Wars, but I do think that there's a certain amount of people who are maybe wishing that Bethesda would make a game like the old games, and I really just don't think you could do that now.
Right.
You know,
it's interesting
not
that
to get
you're
the
saying,
amount of numbers you need for a successful giant production like Fallout 3.
It would be great in some ways if they could and did. But.
Right. I mean, you could make something for the hardcore few.
Yeah.
But can't do that.
It's interesting you're going back and seeing that, because, you know, you were recommending it a couple episodes ago to me, and it makes me wonder if you were doing one of those things where you tell someone, oh, you got to check out this album or you need to get this book or something, but then it might have been years and years since you played it, so you go back and you listen to it and you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
What did I done? I must have been on some reef when I first listened to this.
Well, I am, except that I am still saying it is still awesome.
Yeah.
It's still a classic PC game, but it's definitely old now.
Yeah.
You know, it definitely is not, if you're looking at it with fresh eyes, you know, from a certain perspective, there will be a kind of WTF thing going on with it. Not for me.
That many years in gaming is an eternity.
It is an eternity.
I'm impressed that I'm playing Resident Evil 4 on Wii now, and that because I played it on GameCube when it first came out, and playing it, I got sucked into it over the weekend and just like poop socked it to now I'm on the very end of the game already, and I was like, I was so impressed that like, God, it was a whole generation of hardware ago, and this game is still that awesome. I still love it, and that seemed like an accomplishment. And that's, we're talking, what was that, 2 years ago?
Sure.
Yeah, something like that. More than that, maybe. Yeah. How are the Wii controls?
It's great. It makes it a better game. You took a great game and make it. The game was already a 10 in my mind, and it's like now it's just as good, and the controls are fantastic for it.
The firing was actually one of the problems I was having when I tried to play it on the GameCube.
Right.
So
does it make it too easy?
No.
Okay.
People complain about that. At times, it doesn't make it. It's because it's not a pinpoint.
Right.
It's not like a dot. It's pretty round, and it still randomizes in it. So even if you put it over someone's head, it's not going to blow it up every time. Mm-hmm. But their part, the game is so, it keeps track of how many times you died. I've already died like 30-something times. I mean, I'm at the end now. I'm on the island. But it's like, I'm not used to that. I mean, most games, if I die that many times, that's when I say, fuck this, you know. But it's still hard. But there are parts that were definitely easier, and I loved it. Like when you're riding the escalator, when you're riding, it's kind of like the tram thing, like the ski lift. And there's like a bunch of enemies on the cars opposite you, and some have dynamite, and there's some with crossbows or whatever way down. Like that part, because when you just hit a guy and they're standing on a ledge, they will fall off. But it was fine, because there's enough hard parts in the game that when there's a part where you're like, okay, that wasn't so bad. That's good.
It makes you feel
like
good.
You need to feel relieved at moments in that game.
So does it really use the Wiimote like you would kind of expect?
You can also use it to reload and
It's great for reloading. It makes it easier to reload, and the knife thing, it's perfect. Instead of having to hold a button, you can still do that where you hold a button and then you press another button to stab. Yeah. You can just do a slash with it. Huh. And that's great for when, especially in that game, when you want to conserve ammo, you shoot someone in the knee so he falls on the ground, and then you run up and stab him. Then you're just kind of like slashing with the Wiimote. I thought very simple but very effective use for that.
That one has been calling me like on the shelf recently because I've been...
Sean!
Yeah. Are the reviews sort of holding up to what you're saying? Just in general, is that like the accepted wisdom of this?
I didn't read there. It came out a while. Yeah. It came out like...
A year ago, right?
What?
Not that long.
Well, no, not a year ago. At the beginning of this year?
Yeah.
In game history terms, it's been like a millennium. Yeah.
That's the thing. When we talk about console games, it's like so old news for everyone.
Yeah.
Some people don't want to hear it at all.
Yeah. I got back into, like I said, Viva Pinata, like hardcore, like all day Saturday.
Yeah, how'd that happen, by the way?
I don't really know. It was just all of a sudden. It's been on my like pile of like I got to go back to this game because I never really finished with it. I think I just got distracted by holiday releases.
Yeah.
And it's so good. I mean, you know this.
Yeah.
It's true.
I know it from Xbox.
It's a fantastic game.
It's an amazing game. Yeah. Like, I mean, it is like a cuter, wackier garden-based Sims in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just fun trying to, you know, set up the conditions in your garden to attract certain
I think it has that same appeal that MMOs do, because since it's like tons of little quests where you're always like, as soon as I just get this pinata, and then you get that pinata, and a new pinata rolls up, and he's like, well, as soon as I get that pinata, like it's that same thing.
Oh, yeah.
I never wanted to do chain quests.
Yeah. And like Animal Crossing, too, right?
I mean,
that had some.
Even more than Animal Crossing for me. Like, oh, you don't like Animal Crossing.
There's something about, I don't know. Again, this
the game feels like work.
But Animal Crossing, for some reason, it's like a magnet for... I got to be careful about the terminology.
Yeah, especially since most of us like that game in this room.
Sean.
For autism.
Uh-huh. What are you saying about us?
Okay.
I think it's probably universally adored by people with autism.
Okay.
I'm saying that seriously. I don't mean it mocking, but it's weird to me. Like, I don't understand it.
You don't get it.
That game's stupid to me. And it's not because I have no imagination. It's not because I don't like... I have to be blowing things up to have fun.
You don't like
this
animals.
Isn't the case at all, you know? But it's just, there's, when I did try it based on these, you know, crazy recommendations and these just universally great scores, it's like there's nothing to it. There's really nothing going on. This system is so specific. There's not much play around the periphery, around the borders where things get fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you
just don't understand.
Your house.
It's like you decorate your house. Yeah, and it's like, so, I love these guys. I don't know. It's just
some
like,
people don't like the periphery as much, I guess. They like having a bounded box where they have very specific rules, but they can do anything they want within those rules. And I think that's more what Animal Crossing is.
Yeah.
But
some of us like to be in our little boxes, Sean.
The thing that...
And some of us aren't even autistic either.
I'm thinking more of... Well, again, it's like not all Animal Crossing fans are autistic, but all autistic people are Animal Crossing fans.
Okay.
It's like,
well, that's not a controversial statement to make.
I think it's a very fair statement.
Dude, that's fucked up.
I know, and autism is not funny, but I mean, genuinely, like, people that are very clearly autistic, I'm thinking of, like, YouTube videos and message board activity and
that
stuff.
That one YouTube guy we watch that has autism.
And it appears, yeah.
I ain't ever seen him make an Animal Crossing reference.
He was playing Animal Crossing, too. He was, too, dude. Are you thinking of who? Sonichu?
Yeah, Sonichu.
Fucking yes, he is. I'll send you the link when we're done taping.
All right.
Bullshit.
So, yeah. So, Viva Pinata.
Yeah, anyway.
I don't know how well it did, because I want... Playing this?
I decided it didn't do well.
On 360, it eventually sold a million worldwide or something like that.
Oh, so yeah. Maybe that's enough to warrant a sequel.
Something. I don't know.
Because I like this game to me, like, there are so many little nitpicky things that drive me insane about it that are just like right at the boundaries of where it could be awesome that I just want, like, they're so simple to address in a sequel. Just like certain things about limitations on the number of pinatas you can have, which I'm pretty sure are just technical. Mm-hmm. But it always occurs right when you're about to.
So you have to start a new garden.
Yeah, so you have to like start all these new gardens just to hold more pinatas. And I'm pretty sure it is really just a technical limitation.
I don't think there's going to be a sequel though. I think you're going to the DS one is the last one they're going to do.
What is so that
stuck
like
with that? And the
because they're making
show.
Perfect Dark Zero 2.
or something.
Well, you always got the cartoon, Sean.
That was full of tips. Oh, three fur
that's
cones
where I,
do attract.
That's
the,
where I learned to get a chunicorn.
Chunicorn, yeah.
Really, from the TV show?
Yeah.
Wow.
You need a gem tree.
Yeah, I mean, I
would
think
you
it,
get up
it works
to watch
just like the Pokemon show.
No,
like...
I just watched it at some point because it was on Xbox Live for free.
Oh, the Pokemon show. Yeah, I used to watch that.
I mean, it's the same thing where, like...
It's okay. I was only in my 30s.
There are tips in playing the game embedded in the fights.
Sure.
So, like, that's part of the point of them. It's like, look, did you know that Charmander can do this against this weakness? Oh, now you do.
Yeah, you'd have to watch that show with a notepad. Yeah. It's like going to school watching Pokemon.
Check this
Sean
out.
Pokey disgust. School. Sean is disgusted right now.
That's what I want to keep doing. It's just kind of egging him on here.
I want to go. I'm willing to go and get lost the game. I want
you know,
to try it.
I was thinking that myself.
I thought of that too.
Dude,
yeah.
We
and
have
Ryan. This is
we have
I'm trying again to
here.
Get Ryan. I'm trying to give Ryan the mic.
Okay,
pass the mic.
We can't. We're not getting lost in house, right? Because I mean, we're not getting it sent to us.
No, it's Ubisoft.
It's
but
Ubisoft
the game's out,
we have
so we can go
a
get
copy
it.
In our library.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm sure it's. I heard it's short, so we can pass it along. We only need one copy, and we.
I'm
can
very curious. I will play that one.
You guys really want to play that game?
Word is
I read a review said it was great, except the game was shit.
Yeah, the Game Informer review said it was great, but the game is shit. But,
right,
but
it
the
was
thing
like a
was,
good episode of
they insisted in it, though, that it has significant you know plot developments
no.
that will change the way you
it
regard
doesn't.
The series.
The producer of the show have
right,
already,
they've already
said
it's not canon.
That
right?
it's not canon. The yeah. game does not count. They are not taking the game.
How do you feel?
And they gave the
Hold
game
on.
Like the score they did
based on
the quality of the revelations.
Well,
I mean that's a problem I have with the show in general is the amount of offline revelations they've made. Just like little things. That
but they've
like,
said most of them don't count.
Well, that's stupid. Then why are you doing them?
Why don't they call? Yeah, lost
for
lost
obsessive
some,
people
some
like
lost
Ryan.
Lost the fanfic. The game.
Well, it kind of is, right?
If that's
I mean,
what it
this
is,
game
maybe
is
I'm not
kind of
interested.
They've said explicitly that the game is not canon. But
so
like,
this game is
canon.
Fanfic.
Canon, dude, lore.
Pretty much.
Canon.
The game is not...
I'm just saying, when I use the term canon, you and Rory both gave me a ton of shit about it.
Though. People thought that like I was seriously giving you shit. What was it?
They did, yeah.
Last week, people were mad
For
saying
what?
I was picking
yeah.
on you.
For what?
Right, there was this whole Ryan Defense Force on the threads.
What?
Saying, asking Sean to stop picking on you.
Yeah, what was it?
I don't know. What?
I forget.
And it was,
Ryan,
it was
can
ludicrous.
Can you publicly say that you would defend yourself if you were really pissed off at Sean for picking on you?
Like if you ever thought I was seriously giving you shit, like I was really trying to bug you, like,
well, yeah, I mean,
like there's this understanding.
We rib each other all the time. It's like, it's not a big,
so
it's like, it's like that show where we were, you know, you were making fun of me for having all the like action figures and stuff on my wall.
Yeah,
like I knew what I was walking into when I started talking to
totally.
Her.
And you know, I don't like think any less of you or anything.
Right.
Like, I like to laugh at it, but. We've all had this
people
Fair.
Can't see
anyway,
our smiles.
Ryan has
his
Sean voodoo doll at home after we podcast.
I hate you.
But it was like particularly, it was in last week's episode.
Yeah, it was. It was something
And
last
it was
week.
Something that was so...
They were very upset. At
so, like,
Sean
I can't... I don't even have
I know, we can't even
of what they're referring to, so it must not have bugged me that much.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's your...
Oh, for Pimpin' Smash Brothers.
Oh, Smash Brothers is awesome.
I know, but it was like because you did all the... It was for saying that you were stoking people's game boners over Smash Brothers.
Because
you did two episodes of 1-Up Yours.
I was going to say, but that's because you're hitting like hardcore Nintendo fans and hardcore Ryan fans that are crossing there.
On the internet.
It's just, it's just like the Uber people.
On the internet.
That's a field have hardcore fans.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
It's a little uncomfortable, isn't it?
They wish Ryan was a playable character.
Okay, so what's your loss theory, sir?
Okay.
Based on last episode, is that what you're talking about?
Well, okay, so, you know, spoiler
alert.
Spoilers.
Turn it off if you're not caught up on
Lost. Off-topic spoiler section.
And also spoilers for if you're the kind of crazy person who's not going to watch the trailer for next week, spoilers for the trailer for this week, too.
Okay, you've been warned.
I never
don't
get to
complain.
See those, so huh? I like to hear about it. I don't get to see those because I watch the episodes online, so those don't...
Well, there's some crazy stuff going on the other side of the wall.
Like a helicopter.
Are you guys hearing that noise?
Yeah.
The fuck is that?
Sounds like a motorcycle in our office.
Okay.
That was the hatch,
that'd be awesome.
The hatch exploding.
Whoa.
A V1.
okay.
So last week's episode, you know, we find out that Sun is a member of the Oceanic Six. And
thanks.
Yes. Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And Jin, I'm thinking, well, first of all, I'm thinking Jin's not really dead.
Okay.
There's a lot of people who think
that's a fine theory.
I can go with that.
There's a lot of people who think Jin's dead.
He's alive in an alternate time.
Why? Because they were crying at his gravestone?
Nobody ever said he was dead.
Right. They're crying because they can't get him back on the island.
We saw a gravestone with the date of the crash on it, and I'm assuming there are gravestones.
That's the fake crash.
There are gravestones for many people with that date.
Okay.
So
we're with you there.
Okay. That's not my theory. That's not the main thing.
That's theory, which is mine.
So the trailer for this week's episode.
Sorry.
The trailer for this week's episode, you know, ABC did one of those things. It's like someone will die, which they always freaking do. Mm-hmm. And this week it's Michael focused.
Oh, it is?
Right. It's going to be about Michael. Okay. And so somebody's supposed to be dying.
Okay.
And my crackpot theory about who the dead character is going to be is that it's going to do some sort of like revelation that it's going to be Walt, and Walt is going to have been dead long before this.
Wait, so Walt?
So they're going to do some Desmond time travel crap?
Well, no, I think because we haven't seen Walt since
Walt.
We really didn't
since
see a
Locke
lot
fell
a lot
into
of Walt.
The hole there.
We haven't seen much of Walt since
boy.
The end of season one.
Uh-huh.
Because Walt was abducted. He showed up throughout season two a little bit. And, you know, he's been in like, he's shown up, you know, to Locke and all those.
I feel like I watch the show and I feel like I'm at the Berkeley, UC Berkeley campus, talking to the tree squatters.
Okay, so
let him finish.
So we've seen Walt pop up in all these weird places, you know, when Locke was in the ditch and all that stuff. And, like, you know, we've seen something take the form of, like, dead people in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And that would, you know, if Walt's, like, really dead, that'd just be, like, a cool twist. Like, you know, hey, Walt's been dead.
I think you're onto something there.
Oh, like... the whole time?
Walt's been... Well, we have... Like I said, we haven't seen him consistently since the end of season one. From season two onward, he's been like...
So what does that mean for all the people who have, quote-unquote, seen Walt?
I don't know.
They all see dead people.
Well, I mean, we've seen, like, you know, Jack's father. We saw, you know, like, Mr. Echo's brother and all these characters who have, you know...
That might be the smoke monster's manifestation.
Right,
whatever.
Or whatever.
And even, what the hell was, like, in like, a week ago, the woman who
that's another one.
Had
like,
an
what
affair
is
with her husband, like, she's just kicking in the jungle.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't even bitch slap you.
Yeah.
And then she disappears,
woods.
Like, out of so, the
yeah,
blue.
Yeah, not even for a second did I think she was really there.
Right.
So, but, I mean, here's the thing with Lost. As soon as you introduce ghosts and time travel, you can do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah.
And they've done both of those, so it's just like...
True.
Sky's the limit.
On the note of, I think that you're probably right in that Jin isn't, that it's just like a mock-up, you know?
Well, Sun has to have some incentive to go back to the island later, right?
Yeah, but I think, though, the one bit of evidence that would say that he really is dead is that the actor who portrays him got a DUI.
Uh-oh.
And the last...
Oh, yeah, that's a kiss of death on Lost.
Yeah, there was,
Lost.
Like, Hurley's girlfriend, and then also...
And Imrod.
Huh?
Imrod, Michelle Rodriguez.
Yeah,
Imrod.
Imrod.
Not up on the lingo here, Raw, going home.
If you're in the Lost forms, we all call her Imrod.
And then also, Mr. Echo was like supposedly like belligerent. So
yeah, they didn't like him very much on the set.
They gave him the Charlie Be Good stick or whatever he used to carry around. They sent him packing.
Oh, so what's his face got a DUI? He's boned.
That's
yeah, he's dead.
News to me. Yeah, I didn't know that.
They've killed them all off one by one. Yeah. The DUIs.
Huh. Well, we'll see about your Walt theory.
We will.
Well, like, sure. I mean, like, Lost, like, meta logic dictates that, like, whoever the... whatever character whose episode
like the
this
tree
is,
guy, yeah.
Whoever, you know, it is this character's episode, therefore this character must be the one to die. Like, because that's the rule. That's been the rule for major character deaths. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's going to be Michael and Walt focused, therefore it must be one of them. And it's not going to be Michael, because why would they bring him back for, like, one episode?
Yeah, but they break their own rules all the time. Like, why wouldn't they do that next week? Why couldn't they break their own meta?
I always
feel like when a TV show, like, in the trailer for this one, when they go, someone will die! It's always going to be somebody minor who, like, you never even met.
Oh, yeah, they always – like last week's big tease, like, someone you never expected will return.
And yeah, Rock on Top of Michael.
Surprise. No, and then it's like, then when someone will die, it's like someone looks in their wallet and sees a picture of their great-grandfather, and they're like, yeah, he died last week.
But they did that. They did that with Shannon. They did that with Mr. Echo
ones that were about them were the ones where they died.
Right, and they forecasted it again, like someone will die next week, yeah. And it's always the person who...
I have no doubt someone will die. I don't think they just lie to us.
And it's like, I could see him killing like a minor character, like stupid Miles. Uh-huh. I mean, minor.
Does he still have a grenade in his mouth? That's been 3 weeks or so since...
I wouldn't mind if they killed Locke at this point.
I think...
They could kill him.
Yeah. I think...
They don't know what to do with him, I don't think.
I think if they kill Locke... I think they'll either Jack or Locke in the final moments of the show.
It's someone else jumps off the damn ship. Another, like, no.
There you go.
Zoe Bell jumps off again and dies again.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. What's up with her? Why would they put her in there?
I'm sure you don't just, like, get that chick specifically and then kill her.
Have her two scenes where she's reading a book upside down.
Yeah. Like, she's going to show up in a flashback. Because she's like a name.
The whole time you're babbling on this, like your nickname is Orange, Anthony has just been on his iPhone. But the thing is,
I
want to indict you, because last week you read Walking Dead now. I got you into that. And you came to me with all of your theories about who it is that's holding, you know, one of the principal characters at gunpoint in the last page. And then not only did you have a theory, you went back and you, like, were presenting all of your evidence why this is the case and how you had it worked out.
Like, Anthony's putting his iPhone away now in shame.
But he was, it was the exact same thing.
I'm not hating on you guys about it. I just have no idea what's going on.
That's fair. Like, a lot, you're speaking for a lot of people that listen to the show.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they were all looking at their iPhones too.
We
warned them. Uh-huh. You're still listening and don't listen to Watch Lost.
By the way, thank you for the Walking Dead recommendation, because I picked up the first volume. I went to the local Berkeley comic store and bought it and read it in one sitting, and it was good. I didn't think it was great, and Sean and I.
That's why you
got
to get to the second.
Well, right. I mean, that's what you said, but I did like it enough to hang on for it.
People keep telling me that's an awesome book.
It was really good.
I'm not caught up. I've read like the first 3 or 4 volumes, but that's
you
got to
keep going.
I don't want
to
get
because I was up to the individual issues like a year ago, but then stopped buying.
It's easy though, Jeff, because you don't need to go to the book every. No, it's not, because the collections only come out like once every what, like 6 months, 7 months. So in this case, you can get it on Amazon, and it's like what, $10.99 or something,
$10 a piece, yeah.
That's not the same as going to a store every Wednesday and coming back with a bag of bullshit, Green Lantern and Captain.
Plus, I know, but that's what I'm saying. It's a slippery slope. You start getting into these series, and then, you know, like, let's say I read all your Walking Deads, right? And I'm into it, and there's this big cliffhanger. Am I going to really want to wait for the next volume,
or am I
going to go,
no, it's just,
well, maybe I'll go to Comic Relief and see.
You could just borrow it from me.
Right, I know, but I'm just saying, knowing myself, that I'll go there and then I'll buy one issue and then I'll like be looking in the back and I'll see like ads for like 3 other Image comics and I'll think, oh, maybe I'll buy it.
Well,
oh, issue 1 is coming out of this new thing.
Don't do that.
Good.
See,
then the next thing you know, you got your $30 bag of bullshit.
No,
I just made this mistake.
That's your personality problem then.
Well, it is. I'm saying.
I went to the comic shop with Sean and Sean was like, never buy anything that someone doesn't recommend to you. So like Sean gave me this comic and I was like, all right, this looks cool. I picked up the Ultimates 2 Volume 2, because I wanted to finish that, also recommended. And then, like, when Sean wasn't looking, I saw this other one, and I was like, oh, shit, this looks cool.
What'd you get?
It was called,
Shopping with Dad.
It was called Common Foe. It was, like, set in the Battle of the Bulge. It sounds like a bullshit premise. Set in the Battle of the Bulge.
It only sounds like one.
It's Nazis, and, you know, Americans are fighting. And at some point during the shelling, they blow up this well that's all sealed off, and it was holding back some sort of monster.
Oh, this should be a computer game. Yes.
So then they have to, like,
Wolfenstein.
They have turning point.
Wolfenstein.
They end up putting aside their differences to fight monsters. Wow. High concept. But I ended up getting it, and I was so disappointed.
Really?
And I came to Sean ashamed.
Dude, you're sitting there. I hooked you up with, like, I gave you Shaolin Cowboy. I gave you, like, a fat stack of the Preacher collection.
But I've already read
Walking Dead. I just gave you Meta Barons, and then you had, like, all these. Basically, you're sitting in enough, like, cream of the crop from the last decade. Like, the very coolest for comics that aren't just, like, non-genre, you know. Some of the coolest stuff from, like, filtered. I consider myself fairly selective when it comes to comics and the ones that I, like, I think are crap. And then you just are like, don't just go fucking picking anything, man.
Did you listen to Dad?
No.
Didn't.
No,
I got
two comic recommendations for everybody.
Go for it.
First one is Dark Horse's Conan series by Kurt Busiek.
Kurt Busiek? Really?
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Astro City fan back in the day. Is he still doing that?
Astro City?
Yeah.
Look at your face, Sean. Why are you making...
Are you making that?
Astro City was okay.
Okay, I was going to say, he was already shitting on it with his looks.
It had a few good episodes.
I had read the first two of that Conan one and didn't do anything for me.
Is he basically retelling the story of the...
Is the third one awesome?
I thought the first two were awesome.
So are these coming from the original novels or what?
They are adaptations of the original Robert E. Howard stories.
Okay.
Yeah. They're separate schools. Go on, sorry. Well, there are separate schools of, like, people who recommend, like, different types. There's, like, a few chief types of comic, or, you know, recommenders.
Oh, I see how it is.
And then there's the good ones and the bad ones. Like, that wouldn't be fair to say. Of course, that's how each person in each camp sees it. But then there's the group that will recommend, oh, you're getting into comics. You got to read Transmetropolitan. You've got to read the Sandman. And then what happens is a lot of people... I consider my job... like undoing all the trauma that those people have caused and how they've driven people away from the
medium
entirely.
Now, wait a minute.
There's
no trauma in Transmetropolitan.
Anthony, you stopped reading comics because someone recommended that to you.
Warren Ellis?
No, it wasn't that. It was that I read Transmetropolitan. I didn't really like it that much, but it wasn't enough to
They're worse. It's the difference between, it's not recommending total crap, but it's recommending crap, but that's, like, really not that good. Like, I don't know, man. That's why it's so funny. Like, the split is perfectly, like, epitomized between Preacher, people that like Preacher, people that like Sandman, because, like, Preacher, it directly attacks the Sandman fans and the Sandman writer to the point that there's, like, this character.
But you can like both.
Yeah, what is this? Like, I like both. Like, I think Sandman doesn't hold up that well now when I read it. But, like, at the time.
You're the dude who, when you go to his house and you start browsing around looking in the CD collection.
Uh-huh.
You see, like, CNC Music Factory right next to, like, Nirvana or something.
I cannot deny that.
You're a generalist.
Yes. There
we go. Me too.
I cannot
deny
that.
I've got ABBA and Nirvana and...
I'm all over the place.
Reggae and Joni Mitchell and Peru.
But you're naming... Now you're naming good stuff, though. Like, I don't know.
We can name shit, and I'll have it, too.
I have to...
I have Electric Light Orchestra. How's that?
Dude, it can get worse. I'm talking, like,
CNC
come on,
Music
the, sound,
Factory's
like
pretty
the
bad.
Soundtrack for, like, Shrek or something.
Okay, I don't have that.
It's all the Smash Mouth you want.
Yeah, dude.
Okay, no.
Hey, wait, so hold on. So Conan?
Yeah.
Unless your name's Sean Malloy, it's an awesome series. And DC, The New Frontier. Seriously.
You just needed to see Sean Elliott's face. out eye roll.
We're trying to make comic fans about of our listeners. And if they do this, they're going to come back and, like, roll the book up and shove it down our throat.
DC, The New Frontier, it's two volumes.
Have you read The New Frontier?
I don't need to.
I see. That's how it is.
Use that kind of comic,
I don't need
man.
To listen to the new CNC Music Factory album either. I got burned once. I'm going to make you sweat.
Good point. Okay, but tell us about...
The New Frontier. It's a two-volume, like, graphic novel. It was originally published over, like, six issues or something. It's written and drawn by Darwin Cook. And
he's respectable.
And it's sort of like this, the dawn of the Silver Age of comics. It's, like, set during, like, World War II and all this stuff, and it shows, like...
And Hitler won, right?
No, Hitler did not win. And it shows it's sort of like how the Green Lantern and Martian Manhunter, how they came to be.
But
it's a good story.
I always felt like Martian Manhunter was one of the more, you know, they couldn't come up with a better name than that. I was just like, I don't know. It's like
that shit's made calling, for a lunch.
The Batman concept. Is like villain killer, Martian Manhunter.
The entire concept of Martian Manhunter
Earthling eviscerator.
Exactly.
Huh?
The entire concept of that character is very poor.
Well, also, he just needed a better name. He should have totally protested. Martian Manhunter, fuck you. Well, call me like Xylon. I don't know.
Yeah. The reinventions are, you know, you never know. Like, Ultimates. Like, you take some, like, potentially bullshit characters that have had bullshit stories and thousands of series, and you do something cool with them. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, maybe they did it in the New Frontier.
I've been completely lost. Back in the times when I was reading superhero stuff, I got so lost by the constant reboots. I became utterly disinterested because there were so many Crisis and Year Zero and whatever. I just was like, which fucking Green Lantern is this now?
Yeah, it hasn't changed.
The two exceptions to the superhero, like, I generally don't read superhero comics, and there are like two exceptions, and it's like the Ultimates, which is done now. I mean, it's different people doing it. And even that, there was a part of that, the part where they were in, they had the Skrull Saga, the version of that. I thought that was pretty weak. But that and Powers.
Powers was great.
And Powers is not about superheroes so much as it's about detectives that end up working with crimes that involve someone with powers. So it's kind of like using it as like a theme at the you know, the periphery of it. But the problem with so many, just for general superhero things, is you have this cool concept where when movie adaptations are made of these, they always start with it. Like, what happens if you take a very real world and you give someone a power in it? And then it always, but then it's like, well, then what are they going to do? And of course, there should be a billion things that they could do. I mean, you could just like have endless fun with the concept. But then they go down the dumb road, and it's like, well, there got to be someone, a supervillain with powers to fight. And then what do you do for the sequel? Then you add like three more people with powers and three more villains with powers. And it's like you see this trailer for the new Hulk thing, right? If there was just the new Hulk movie, it was just about like Bruce Banner and he became the Hulk in the world, everything else is as we know it. But instead, he fights another Hulk that he's just like, you could see his rib cage.
Yeah, but Unbreakable proved you need the counterpoint, right?
I don't think it proved that.
Unbreakable is not exactly the quintessential. I mean, it is in a lot of ways a realistic superhero movie, but
What I'm saying is, like, when you have a world where everyone is in tights and can do these remarkable things, you lose the power, the ability to look at what makes that interesting in the first place. And then when you do come up with more concepts, it's like, shit, how do we come up with another hero? And then you come up with something and you don't even do anything to explore the ramifications of it because it's time to move on to the next thing, or because there's so many fucking people in tights in your book, all you could do is draw like splash pages of them like flexing, which I always talk about. And there's not like, you know, like what happens if there's like a mentalist or something and you can influence people? How would that work? You know, like there's nothing. It's just like, more like what pose is he going to be in when he's in a battle with 50 other superheroes? I hate it. It's stupid. But that's why like there's things that are like they're supernatural in some way, like Walking Dead. Zombies are involved, but again, Walking Dead is kind of like the zombie version of what powers is to superheroes. It's like set in a world with heroes, and it's set in a world with zombies, but it's not about zombies.
Yeah.
And then other books like, you know, Preacher, they're people with the sort of divine or, you know, various powers and stuff. But it's not like...
Well, and in Preacher, you're also dealing with a guy who's just a brilliant writer, too. I mean, that his dialogue and stuff like that just made it a pleasure to read.
But that's how it works, because he stops and says, what happens, say if you got this guy and he has like the equivalent of the word of God, or if he says something, people have to obey. What is he? When would he use it? What kind of things is he going to say? How is it going to work? You know, like, I mean, and he gets into that sort of thing. It makes it fun. I mean,
yeah,
right.
I mean,
but I've read plenty of comic
books. The most realistic take on that.
Yeah, and I've read plenty of comics where the idea is good or the concept is good, but the writing falls down.
Right.
You know, where they can't follow through.
Oh yeah, great ideas are a dime a dozen. But
yeah, there's and like
a
Preacher, there's so much more than that. There's the fact that like over the course of however many issues it was like 89 or something, that it was very carefully plotted, and so that the way that all the characters like relationships with one another develops. I got to be careful because Anthony hasn't finished it, but the way that it's just like it's just so natural, and it
runs its course, and everyone's, you know, stories and backstories are just like fully explored and realized in like totally satisfying ways. I mean, so there's a whole lot going on there other than here's someone, they need to get their monthly check and they got to find a new way to justify that page I always bring up where there's 50 people in tights, you know. It's like mm-hmm. night and day difference in production and how the people are going about it.
Yep. Agreed.
Agreed.
Oh. We'll have to do a thing, Ryan. We'll trade. You can give me something that I have to agree to read, and I give you something.
Have any of you guys read Usagi Yojimbo?
This is like, yeah.
This is like the first... Do you guys like that? Because I'm a big Usagi Yojimbo fan.
I like it. I mean, I'm so spotty. I have not read it from front to back. Like, every once in a while, pick up a few runs.
But. Which is worth doing because it's pretty much one long ongoing saga of this rabbit samurai.
Wasn't he a character in
Ninja Turtles?
Ninja Turtles?
Well, there was a brief there was a brief crossover, yeah, because those guys are buddies. So he did show up in Ninja Turtles, yes.
But that's not canon.
I own the toy.
Yeah, that's not canon.
That's a whole other issue.
Yeah.
There's that other thing that comes up, though. When you're talking about Walking Dead, where the first collection isn't the best and isn't the best indicator mm-hmm. of like what the series as a whole accomplishes. And I hate that because many great series suffer from that. Like Preacher's one. The first collection, when I got it, I really didn't know if it was worth going yeah. for a follow-up. And then it totally, it's like the writer just fucking
I liked it enough.
Yeah,
I did like it enough that I wanted to see it through, definitely. But there were moments in the first couple. I can't tell where the issue divides are in this first volume.
Uh-huh.
But there were a few moments, a few panels early on that felt very clunky to me because they were overly expositional. They were sort of like, now that we're surrounded by zombies, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
You know, sort of typical. There's a couple, and it was like, wow, you really didn't need that bubble.
There's
there.
A couple panels, you know? in Walking Dead in particular that just made me cringe. But overall, it's really
It gets
good.
Beyond that.
Yeah.
And it gets better as you get beyond that book in the same way that, for me, Preacher like really takes off. By the time I was in the third one, I was sprung. And then there's another series I really like called Blade of the Immortal. And that's the same way where the first collection is like, it almost needs to be just stripped away from and rewritten because the guy became such a, I mean, he became an actual storyteller in the course of figuring
right.
his These, way out. Uh-huh. And it's like, that is kind of there. And it's like, but since that's the starting point when you want to turn someone onto it, it sucks to give someone something and say, just trust me, it'll get better. Cause that's mm-hmm. like a pretty horrible way to recommend something, but it's the truth. And in a lot of cases.
Yeah. I read a lot of series, like even books where, you know, by the time you get to the end, you go back and look at the first one.
Sure.
Like, how did I get through that when, like, this is the ultimate conclusion? And even the author admits that, like, I really didn't know where I was going.
Yeah.
With this
that
book.
Often happens like, with authors, right? They'll go back and discredit their earliest works.
I wish Kirkman would go and redo the entire first book of Walking Dead. And the other reason is that because they had a different artist, this guy Tony Moore, and then Charlie Adler took over from that from the second collection forward. So by far, all the work. And a lot of people look at it, I think, I don't know, they look at Tony Moore's work and if they don't know much about, I don't know.
Well, there's a couple, they
have an unrefined eye for illustration.
There's a couple of pictures Tony Moore does that you're like, man, it's really fucking cool. But overall,
yeah,
he's not as good.
Well, I think that's the thing with him. He's one of those sort of like superficially flashy artists, at least there, where like, oh, like he's got some just recognizable style or it looks cool and... Just in the way that kids respond to, like, Rob Liefeld or Todd McFarlane or something in their day. I mean, exactly, 100%, you know, and they go, oh, because compared to, like, Rob Liefeld to Dave Mazzucchelli, the guy who did Batman Year One, very traditional, very straightforward. And so if you're a kid and you look at it and you're like, dude, there's like, five times as many lines in a Rob Liefeld thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's got like 60 teeth in his mouth. That's got to be better.
there's you can see every strand of muscle.
Yeah. You can see every sinew in his body. It's totally better, isn't it?
But more then lines.
If you have any idea for visual storytelling and for pacing and just for composition, rather than just drawing some thing that looks stylish, you know, stylistically, you know, cool, but then understanding that you're not just drawing pinups, that communicating a world where when you look at it, you should be able to imagine, what would I see if I turned around 180 degrees? What's back here? Like, if this guy is shoved, where's he going to end up, you know? Mm-hmm. And Adler is fantastic at that. And he's very, like, in a traditional classical sense, and he's a really accomplished artist. And I'd love to see him redo and some of those lines, and then the writer mm-hmm. go in and rework some of that, like, really clumsy stuff in the first book.
Have you read Invincible? I'm just curious if you've
read it. I thought, yeah. Darren gave me a collection of that, and I thought it was pretty crappy.
Is that the same writer?
It's Kirkman,
it's the same guy. Okay. That happens a lot. I mean, in comics, it always demonstrates how, you know, symbiotic a relationship it is, for at least if you're not like a Frank Miller or something where you're doing your own stuff, writing it and illustrating, where you could take, you know, like Garth Ennis is another example. There's tons of books that he's done with other artists that are complete shit.
You
wouldn't even recommend it. It's not even worth reading if someone gave it to you for free. And it makes a huge difference. I mean, it's definitely a collaborative medium, and mm-hmm. no one guy can carry it. I mean, there are times when maybe you'll buy a book because the art's just so phenomenal. Like with Jeff Darrow, I'll do that.
I've almost never gone wrong with anything from Alan Moore. Like, I started reading all the stuff he started doing again in, God, what was that, the late 90s or early 2000s, mm-hmm. when he came back with the ABC stuff.
But he's no idiot.
Top 10 and stuff.
Top 10.
He's pretty good at picking who he works with.
Yeah.
Rob Liefeld notwithstanding. But, like, you know, when he worked with Campbell for From Hell, mm-hmm. when he worked with Gibbons for Watchmen, these are very wise choices.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who did... Extraordinary Gentleman was a perfect fit.
Yes.
I mean, all those other books, Top 10, I mean, those... Gene Ha, I mean, he's mm-hmm. not ending up with, like, hey, I'm going to send you my script and you find someone to illustrate this for me.
Right.
It's clear that there's
he's in a different position.
Real collaboration occurring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm signaling that I have to go.
Well, why don't you tell us that?
Yeah, I have to go.
That's out.
I have a meeting. In fact, I'm 20 minutes late for it.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
You'd make, like, a pretty bad spy or somebody who needs to do hand signals to other people on a team.
Yeah, I'm not in the secret agent business, so.
Okay. Well, maybe this is irrelevant.
You might be covering that up by saying that.
Right,
well, let's get out of here.
I'm a double agent. Hey, Anthony, any last words? You look like you had something to say there.
No, I'm just pissed that I have to go back to work and Sean gets to leave and go play Co.
Oh, not yet.
Sean
gets to leave? I still have stuff to edit now. I got a big story on DCS's new flight sim helicopter. And I got the interview from Matt Peckelman. I need to put it together into a story. But it's actually pretty cool. It's going to be some work. But
excellent. This week, coming up on OneUp.com, we have our next top five, which is going to be top five botched PC game launches. So look for that, I think, Friday. Mm-hmm. That's going to be up there. Oh, and also, Tom versus Bruce fans. If you're fans of Tom versus Bruce from our magazine, we have started as of this week. We're going to put them all up online. And we put the first one up yesterday.
Yep.
And they're going to go up weekly, I think,
until
they're all there sitting up there in an online archive. And if you are just an online or a podcast listener and have not read these are pretty funny one-on-one matches that these two guys have every month in our magazine. So,
I've been going since like 2003.
More plug. Yeah, these go back 4 years, 5 years.
Yeah. Okay. Also, since it's going up this week, something else I don't get to go and play. I need to prepare a story for online. But we're putting up a series over the next 3 weeks of these interviews that we've done in GFW. These aren't the GFW interviews, but these are these comedy pieces. I don't want to give it all away, but think of give it away. Fuck it. Think of Christopher Guest movies inspired by that kind of thing. What was there?
Like Waiting for Guffman?
Guffman, and I mean, they're Spinal Tap, that sort of thing. So look for those. Those, like, originally appeared in the magazine. Some new ones are appearing in the magazine, and then they're growing up online. I think a lot of people, like, overlooked them or didn't understand what was happening, and going back and rereading them, and I think they're badass. So
they are very funny.
I want to make sure they're
well worth reading.
Yeah. So that's another pimp.
All right.
Now we out. Make a sound, Jeff, as we leave.